Welcome to Tosfos Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Basra Dav Chof Aleph. Today's shiur will begin from the second line from the top. We, as mentioned in our previous shiur, are picking up in the middle of a discussion. In our previous shiur, we started a discussion concerning the ability of a member of a chotzer to protest noise. And as we saw in the Mishnah, it all depended on where the noise was coming from. We saw in the Mishnah, in our previous year, that when it comes to a chanus, a store, so members of the chotzer can protest the nichnosim v'yotzim, the noise coming from all the customers that are coming and leaving the store. We then saw a seeming contradiction in the Sefer of the Mishnah, which spoke of the inability to protest the sound of the tinoikus. And the thinking was that you were dealing with children that are sent to stores to buy merchandise items for their parents, so that in the Sefer, you cannot protest the noise of the customers. Rava's resolution, after we saw Abaye's resolution, Rava's resolution was that the Sefer of the Mishnah, where there is an inability to protest, is dealing with not customers coming to the store, but rather children that are in the chotzer learning Torah. So that even though the children may be coming from all kinds of places, Rashi mentions afagav dekila bo machma sachirim, nevertheless the members of the chotzer cannot protest that noise. You'll notice in the section of the Gemara, which represents the beginning of today's shiur, a long bracketed piece of Gemara. Following the brackets, you'll notice a house marking, which is explained on the side of the Gemara, under the Mivneh, Kushos al Tshuvas Rava. Right after the brackets, the Gemara starts questions on Rava's answer that appeared at the top of the Omid, that which we just said, namely, Seifasam L'tinei Shilbeis Rabban. Hagemara mevia kan mekuros demashim bechotzer yuchayim limchoyis shelo yehayetzlam malamit tinoikis. The house introduces a series of questions from sources, which indicates that you cannot have in the chotzer. In other words, members of the chotzer can protest a situation of a malamit tinoikis, whereas Rava says that is something that members of the chotzer cannot object to. The sources seem to indicate that a malamit tinoikis is something that members of the chotzer are able to object to. Well, that will appear, as we said, after the bracketed section. Within the bracketed section, the Gemara, deviates from the give and take and gives you a background to the whole institution of having a malamed tinoikis in the chotzer. What's a malamed tinoikis? We said it's a person in charge of teaching Torah to children. Isn't it a father's obligation to teach Torah to his children? Do we not say in the Kriya Shema, based on, of course, the Pasuk in Dvorim, Perek Yudal of Pasuk Yutes, V'limadetem Oysom Es Benechem? So here in the brackets we are given, or we're treated to, a historical treatment of this issue. On the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading, which reads, Takonas Rabbi Yeshua ben Gamla Sheichinuch L'Torah Nagish. The institution of Rabbi Yeshua ben Gamla, who lived in the period of the second Beis Hamikdash, he actually functioned as a Kohen Gadol, which Rashi references, who instituted that Torah education for children shall be nagi, shall be readily available, l'chol echad mi'aldei Yisrael, for all children of the Jewish people. A structural note, under the Mivneh we have a volcano shape, a trapezoid, which represents shlavim. These are stages. Ad shibo Rabbi Yeshua ben Gamla v'tikein takonoso. Stages, historically speaking, leading up to Rabbi Yeshua ben Gamla's takona. And we will see a double underline highlighting the expression my dorosh. What did they see at these given stages for their, we'll say, earlier institutions? Now the Gemara, after mentioning that you'll have a situation of a malamed tinoikis in a given chotzer, this is a reality from the point of the Takonis Rabbi Shua ben Gamla v'Elech. The Gemara on the second line from the top says, "Yomer of Yudah Marav Bram Zachur Oiso Ha'ish L'Toiv Yeshua ben Gamla Shmo." Rabbi Yudah, in the name of Rav, says that we shall remember this man for the good that he did, and it's Rabbi Yeshua ben Gamla. Shilmolahi, if not for him, Nishtakach Torah Misrael. Torah would have been forgotten from the Jewish people. Of course, a rather lofty compliment, crediting an individual with the preservation of Torah for the Jewish people. I can't say that there were many people throughout Jewish history that merited or received such an accolade. Shebetchilo, in the beginning, mi sheyesh lo av melamdei Torah, mi shein lo av lo hoya lomei Torah. Someone who had a father would be educated in Torah. Someone who did not have a father would not have a Torah education. My Dorosh, what was the initial drosha that led to that conclusion? The pasuk says, and we know this pasuk from the Kriya Shema, velimadetem oisam. From the second parsha of Kriya Shema, it says, velimadetem oisam es b'neichem ledaber bom. And what is velimadetem oisam? How do we darshan that? Velimadetem atem. The word osam can be with, as core of the Torah does not have vowels, so you'll see the word aleph, tof, mem in the Torah itself. Instead of reading it as osam, you could read it as atem, meaning you, the fathers. There is, you'll see in the Tosfos, there are actually two approaches to this pasuk, and the other approach is, even without the word darshaning or dealing with the word osam, the word of velimadetem means atem telamdu, you shall teach, meaning the fathers. Well, and if a child had no father, he wouldn't learn Torah. They then instituted, realizing that there's a population of children that has no father, that Torah centers of study, elementary educators, were established in Jerusalem. My Dorosh, well, what was the thinking that led them to that? The pasuk says, "Ki mitzion teitze soira udvar Hashem Yerushalayim." The Torah comes forth from Jerusalem, and hence they established Mamet Tinoikis to be seated in Yerushalayim. Vadayin, but still, mi sheyesh lo av hayamalu umlandoi, a child that had a father would be able to take the child to Jerusalem. Mishen lo av lo hoya oila, a fatherless child wouldn't have someone to take him. Lo hoya oila v'lomeg, wouldn't be taken to Jerusalem to learn Torah. I just want to point out that, based on what one can see in the Beforshim, specifically the Re'im Horowitz, which you can find at the end of the printed Shas Gemoras, in the back of those Gemaras, in the Gemara opened up with the first stage, someone that has a father, and then it said, what about children that don't have a father? And then at this second stage, it says, well, he who has a father will be able to take the child to Jerusalem. But you just got finished saying that this whole business of taking children to Jerusalem was for children that were fatherless. So where do fathers appear? So he explains that at the first stage, the child that had a father who was Torah knowledgeable would teach his son. Someone who did not have a Torah knowledgeable father would, so a child like that wouldn't have the chance to learn. So what did they do? They established Melamed Tinoikis in Yerushalayim. So at that point, we're dealing with fathers that are Amaratzim. They would take their children to Jerusalem. But then there were still children that had no fathers at all, even Amaratzim. So what would happen, what would be with them? So the Gemara continues, and we're at the third volcano in the Gemara. Hiskinu shiyu moshivin b'chol plach uplach u'machnis noson keven tazayin ven yudzayin. They then instituted that children at the Melamed Tinoikis educational centers would be established in each plach. Plach is a regional breakdown that contains a number of medinos. for just for illustration purposes, not translation purposes, but you can imagine you can have a continent, and within the continent a region that contains several countries, and then you have the country level breakdown, and beyond that there are further breakdowns. So for our purposes, the plach is an area that contains several medinos. So that's what in various, we'll call them various regions, within each region, a Torah study center was established. And children that were 16, 17 years old would go there and study. However, we're not home yet. A child would be the victim of his teacher's wrath. How do teenagers respond when the teachers get angry at them? Mevaipo v'yotze, he'll kick him and leave him. You know, as I'm sure many of you could appreciate, trying to tell a teenager what to do and what not to do isn't always received with the most gracious response. So to have the future of Torah based on children, on teenagers being the recipients of Torah education is not too reliable. Ad Shabal Yoshua ben Gamla v'tikein, until he came along and established you Moshivan Malamdi Tinaikis v'chol Medina Medina v'chol Ir v'Ir. And as you can see, you have further breakdowns. We mentioned plach before. Now a subdivision of a plach is medinas, and a subdivision of a medina is a city, a ear. So he established that there shall be Torah study centers, schools for children, umachnisen oisan keben sheish keben sheva. And children 6 years old, 7 years old would be recipients of a Torah education. And with the children that are that young, you don't have the fear of them being mevaye v'yoytze. Omar le Rav le Shmuel bar Shilas. We've double underlined this phrase. These are featured on the side under the Mivneh, the structural note. Eitzos chi nu chiyos Shenosan Rav le Shmuel bar Shilas. Words of advice, counsel given by Rav to Rav Shmuel bar Shilas, Malamed Tinaikis Yodua, a well-known elementary educator. So Rav said to Rav Shmuel bar Shinas Las, Ad shis lo takbiol, that until the child is 6 years old, don't accept him. He's too young for being accepted in a school environment. Mikan v'elech kabiol v'asfi le ketura. Beyond that, beyond six, accept him, and literally means stuff him like an ox. What does stuff him like an ox or feed him like an ox mean? So Rashi says on the third narrow line, v'asfi le ha'achilehu v'ashkehu Torah bal korchoi. Feed him and give him Torah to drink even against his will. Kishor, as an ox, shenoisim lo il al tzavaro, like we put a yoke upon the neck of an ox, even though it's, and with that the ox plows. It's not something that the ox accepts willingly, but that's the way we do things. The Rabbeinu Gershom, Asfi Lei Kitura, we'll read on the side from the Rabbeinu Gershom, Klomar, Tein Olov Oil Torah, place upon the child the yoke of Torah, Kamo Lishor Ze, like the way we deal with an ox. In what sense? Sha'ivsim Oisei Baal Korcho, Umachnisim Boi Hamaychel, we stuff the ox against the ox's will. In other words, we stuff him kidei shei shomein, so that he becomes fat. Kach ikanes bo Torah. So too, feed the child Torah. So the there's some nuances here, fine differences between the Rashi and the Rabbeinu Gershon in terms of the analogy to the ox. Rashi emphasizes the placing of the yoke upon the ox. That's the Baal Korcho element. And the Rabbeinu Gershon speaks of the feeding of the ox as the Baal Korcho element. We turn back to the Gemara. V'yomale Rav l'Rav Shmuel bar Shilas ki mochis li'anuka, when you have to chastise a child, and mochis literally means when you have to hit a child. Lo timchi ela baraksa de misana. Don't hit him with anything other than a shoe strap. The shoe strap is an illustration of a very light form of impact. The whole old school educational approach of a corporal punishment and the image of a belt strap across the child's body is not part of Torah educational philosophy. Yes, there's reference to corporal punishment, but it's in a very, very light fashion, and that's the illustration of Araxa de Misana. Now, after that kind of punishment for a child who seems to be uncooperative, Dikori, if the child will then read, study the Torah, fine. Dilokori, a child that even with that doesn't respond to learning, doesn't read, leave him there. Don't throw him out. Leave him there so he will serve as tzafsa. Tzafsa is the idea of being company, so that the others are not alone. So that you can see from here that the mere presence of the child in the educational environment is beneficial. Who is it beneficial to? So it could be that it's beneficial to those that are studying, and it's also beneficial to the child that's not studying right now. Things will sink in later on. But once again, you see that even after administering the light form of corporal punishment, the child who is nevertheless not responsive is kept in that environment. As we indicated before, this marking is a reflection back on Rava's explanation of the Mishnah. And Rava had said that the seif of the Mishnah, which said you cannot protest tinoikos, was a reference to children who are there for Torah educational purposes. Meisvei, and now we raise an objection. Echad libnei chotzer shebikesh la'asos, a member of the courtyard that decides to become a roifei uman guardian lamed tinoikos, Bnei Chotzer Me'akvin Olav. Rofe is a moyel, a circumciser. Uman is a doctor, a bloodletter. Gardi is a weaver. And Melametinoikis, which is what we've dashed on the line, and that's what we want to focus on. It says Bnei Chotzer, and again we dashed on Me'akvin Olav. They can protest, and it's their protestation is because of the noise. What did Rava say? Rava said Melametinoikis is a type of presence that you cannot protest, as he interpreted the end of the Mishnah. The Gemara says there's no difficulty. The source we just read is not a reference to Torah education. It's a reference to children that are from idolatrous families that are there for some other form of education. Let's say learning a trade, learning topics of general interest. But that we're not dealing with Tinaikish Abbas Rabban, we're dealing with Tinaikish Da'akum. Toshma, Shnaim, Sheyeshman, Bechotzer, Vikesh, Echot, Mehem, Lasos, Rafe, Vumon, Vagardim, Lama, Tinaikish, Chaveru, Makev, Alav. Here we have another source, which speaks of members of a Chotzer, very similar to the source before, and one of these two decides to become a Lama, Tinaikish, the other neighbor can protest. Is that not against Rava? Hachanami, similarly here we answer, like before, but Tinoika is Da'akum. Toshma, Mishia Yoshlo, Bayez Bechotzer HaShutfin, a person that has a house in a jointly own chotzer. So you have a courtyard that's jointly owned and houses that open into it. Hare ze lo yaski renu. You shall not rent it. Lo leroife, v'lo luman, v'lo legardi, v'lo lesofer Yehudi, v'lo lesofer Amoyi. And now here, you see, we've dashed the line, sofer Yehudi. That's a child teacher. That's an Amlamatinaikis. And that is, seems to be against Rava. But sofer Amoyi, that you see at the end of the source, is a reference to someone that teaches Goyashe children. Well, all of these, you can see, you can protest. And sofer Yehudi is against, as the source represents a kashan rova. Hocha b'may askinon b'sofer masa. This is not your standard child educator, but rather it's a sofer masa. What's a sofer masa? Regarding this, there's a machlokes that we'll see in the Tosfos. Tosfos quotes Rashi that says it's a person who's an expert in elementary education, and Rashi says he teaches the teachers. This represents a teacher's seminar. Tosfos quotes Rashi. He doesn't emphasize that aspect of Rashi. Maybe at a different gear than Rashi. Tosfos refers to Rashi as the sofer is a sofer masa is a malamed tinokes of the whole city. So that generates a great deal of noise. And the Rabbeinu Hananel, the Tosfos does not adopt a Rashi Pshat, and he suggests Sofer Masa is someone who writes documents. So it was a case of Shtoris. So, but the main point for us is that this too is not a Kasha on Rava. On the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading with a structural note, and also indicate that this goes till Omid Beis. We'll see Memros of Rava, Memros Shel Rava Benosei Chinuch, comments made by Rava regarding education. And as we go through, you'll notice there are numerous triangles. At a certain point, you'll see an inverted triangle highlighting Rav Dimi's name. These are points in this series of comments where Rav Dimi disagrees with Rava. Omar Rava, we turn to the Gemara, Mitakonis Yoshua ben Gamlo ve'elech, from his Takon onwards, Lo mamtina yenukim yimasa lamasa, one is not to transport a child from one city to another. Avol mi bei knishta, le bei knishta mamtinon. However, within one city, if it's an issue of transporting the child from one shul, the shul was a place that children were centered for their studies, you could transport the child from one synagogue to another. In other words, you might have a shul that's close to you. You're entitled to take your child to a shul that's a little further away. Let us look at Rashi in the middle of the Omid. Lo mamtino yenuka mimaksa lamasa. From his takon words, we don't send children from one city to another. Lumoid miyoim liyoim. On a daily basis, Shema Yuzak Bedrochim Shasot Mikatreg Shalasa Sakona. We don't want to subject children to danger, and the roads represent a place of danger. In so far as the Sultan tries to intervene, cause difficulty when in a time of danger, and the road represents a place of danger. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, Pen Yigrenu Oson. Yaakov Avinu was fearful of what would happen to his son Binyamin if he is sent to Mitzrayim. Elo Yuchal Lachuf Bnei Oisem Asloshim Lamitirkis. A father of a child can force the other members of his community to hire a child educator. Now, we're not talking about private lessons. This din of forcing the members of the community to hire a child educator is assuming that there, Tosfos points this out later, assuming there are a minimum number of children in that particular town. Now we go back to the Gemara and we speak about the heter of transporting a child from shul to shul. That's qualified though. The Gemara says, Ve'i mafsik naro lo mamtinon. If there's a river between where you are and the shul, you want to take the child, you don't take him across the river. If there's a wide bridge, then it's okay. Iko gam lo mamtinon. However, if the only way of crossing the river is with a narrow bridge, that's a gamla, it's that, then we don't allow. So that if you in a case like that, you don't take him from one shul to the next. You keep, you have him learn in the shul that's nearest you. The Omar Ravop, Sach Makri Dardiki, Esum Hamishinuki. The number of children for hiring an instructor is that Sach was a reference to a number of children. Makri Dardiki for we'll say the forced hiring of a teacher is if there are 25 children. Viko Hamshin was Vino Train. If there are 50 children, then we hire two. You can see from here, there's a maximum size class concept. Ve'ika arboyin, let's say you don't have 50, but you have more than 25. Let's say you have 40 children. Then, mukminon reish duchno umesayin le mimaso. And you hire a teacher's assistant. A reish duchno, for our purposes, means a teacher's assistant. Rashi elaborates. Well, let's look at Rashi together. Reish duchno, about a quarter of the way up from the bottom. He says, Shoimea imatinoikis mipi hamalamed. He hears what the teacher is saying. He sits with the children. The choizer umashgiro befi hatinoikis. Shogur befi, that's an expression maybe you're familiar with. Shogur means fluency. So this teacher's assistant then goes over the lesson with the children till it's fluent in with them. And this hired teacher's assistant receives a wage. And the next Rashi says, "Misayin lo mimat le mimaso liskolo oisay reished duchna." Masa is the city. From the municipal funds, he will receive his wages. The Gemara continues. V'yomar rova hay makri yenuki the goros v'kachrin adun goros tfei minay. If you have two teachers, one goros means he covers he. He teaches them material, and another one teaches them more material. Lo misalkin ole, you don't remove the first teacher in favor of the second one who would goras tfei. Why don't we do that? Dilma osi leis rashuli. When we take a look at Rashi, dilma osi leis rashuli. This rashuli has to do with becoming lax. What would be the result of that situation of putting in the second, removing the first guy in favor of the second one? Yispoyer belibo shein kamoso. He'll become haughty, thinking there's no one like me. Oh, once you think you're the best, v'yisrashim natinikis velo yare shemo yisaku, and he'll become lax with regard to the children, having no fear that he will be removed. Thinking once they saw someone else, once he saw someone else removed in his favor, he thinks he's the top guy, and no one's gonna challenge him. And now we go on in the Gemara. Rav Dimi Minarda Omar, he disagrees. He says Kol Shekein the Goras Tfei, certainly remove the first guy in favor of the second guy, because that second guy knows that there was a first guy who was removed. We take a look at Rashi. Kol shekein kishe chashbenu yitein leiv lios lomed yofa shedoig mikinas chavero. When they gave him importance by having the second guy be the replacement, he knows that the first guy is full of jealousy, and he's concerned that because of that. He's concerned with that, and he'll be all the more diligent as a result. That's what the Rashi goes on to say. That first guy is very likely to cause this second guy embarrassment. So as to avoid that, the second guy, will be all the more diligent. So according to Rav Dimi, if there is a second teacher that will teach them more, so by all means hire him, and the very fact that he's a replacement will be the insurance of his diligence. The Omar Rava Hani Trey Makridardiki, let us say you're confronted with the following choice. You have two candidates to be Makridardiki, child educator. Chad Goras Velo Dayek. One covers ground. Rashi says Lo Mid Harbe, but he's Lo Dayek. What does Velo Dayek mean? Rashi says Velo Dayek. The last line of Rashi: Belimuratinoikus Shelo Yishtavshu. He's not diligent in ensuring that the children don't make mistakes. In other words, he'll cover ground, keep moving on, new material, and not verifying whether the children really know the material without in a mistake-free fashion. So that's one teacher. He's Goras Velo Dayek. And now you have another teacher, the other candidate, Dayek Velo Goras. He's very diligent, but he doesn't cover a lot of ground. Which one do you choose? Moisvinon Ahu de Goras Velo Dayek. Rava says we would opt to choose the teacher, opt for the one that covers ground, teaches them a lot, and is not so careful. Ah, what about the mistakes the children may make along the way? Shabeshto, mistakes memela nafka. In the course of time, they dissipate. As a person gets older and reviews the material, he'll review it, we'll say, sifting out the mistakes that may creep up along the way. And once again, you will see here Rav Dimi disagrees. Rav Dimi, Nardo Omar, Moisvina de Dayek Velo Goras. We would opt to have the more precise type teacher over the one that covers a lot of ground. Shabeshta Kivadol, oh, he is fearful that Shabeshta, a mistake, once it becomes, once it enters, it stays there. The mistake that you learn early in the game, you continue with that mistake and repeat it and repeat it until it becomes part of you. And hence Rav Dimi would say better to choose the one who is Dayek Velo Goras. Everyone will agree, though, that if you have a teacher that both covers a lot of ground and at the same time is very diligent with regard to the children, that's the best choice. You can see that we have a bracketed section. Now, we note on the side that these brackets are not for skipping purposes, but it's in order for one to be able to preserve the series of comments made by Rava. So if you skip to the next Omid, Talmud Beis, you'll see V'yomar Rava Marki Dardiki, etc., as a continuation of the series of Rava comments. Now, within the brackets, Rav Dimi brings, proof to his point of Shabesh Takivan to all. Now, the brackets. Dichtiv, ki sheshes chadoshim yoshav shom yoyo v'chol Yisrael ad hichris kol zochor v'edom. The posuk describes a war between the Jews that was led by the general Yoav, and it says that they were in military form for 6 months until they cut off all the males of Edom. As we'll see in the continuation of Gemara, Edom is associated with Amalek, and the Torah expects of the Jewish people to destroy and eliminate Amalek, all of them, not just the males. In this pasuk, you can see we've dashed underline Zohar, the males. Ki osu lekame de David. When Yoav came to David, the king, Omar lay, David says to him, we continue at the top of Omid Beis, my taimo avdishochi, why did you do thusly? Namely, why did you not kill the females? Omar lay dichtiv, the posuk says, timche es, and here you have, without vowels, but he vowelized it as zohar amalek. Again, timche es zohar amalek, eliminate the males of the Amalekites. Omarlei, so David says back, Vo'anan, Zecher Karinon. We read it not as Zohar, meaning the males, but Zecher, any memory of them. Wipe them all out so that there is no one left, no memory of them. Omarlei, so Yoav says back, Ano Zohar Akriun. Well, when I was taught the Mikra, the Psukim, I was taught Zohar. Ozal Shaile Lerabe. So he went and asked his teacher. In other words, Yoav went to verify the matter with his teacher. Amaleh Akrisan. So Yoyev asks, how did you teach us? Amalei Zecher. This response, by the way, is borne out by the comment you find in the Tosfos at the bottom of Omen Aleph. In our marked Gemaras, you can see we have a double starred notation which draws your attention to the Rabbeinu Hananel at the bottom of the Omed Aleph, the Tosfos there. So the teacher says, I taught you Zecher, wipe out the memorial of them, not the memory of them, not the males. Shokal Safsir Lemiktale. Yoav drew his sword to kill him, to kill the teacher. Amalei Amai, why do you want to kill me? Amalei, so Yoav says, Dichtiv Oru Oisim Melechas Hashem Ramiya. Cursed be the one that is devious in his work of God. A child educator of Torah is involved with Melechas Hashem, but you were deceitful, Ramiya. Amalei, the Malamed, says, okay, you want to claim that there was Ramiya, there was deviousness in my work. Exactly what that is, we'll wait and see later on in the commentaries. In the meantime, though, the Malamed says to Yoav, Shafke lo gavro deleku boru. Leave him alone. It's in the third person, but it's a reference to himself. Leave me alone, that I shall absorb the curse. The Pasuk says curse. Doesn't say anything about death. Amalei, so Yoav says back, see if the continuation of the Pasuk says, V'oru monei harbo midam, and cursed be the one who withholds himself from shedding blood. In other words, when it's necessary to execute, and one doesn't do that, the one who doesn't carry out that expectation is cursed. I don't want to be cursed, so I will kill you. Iko Diamri, some versions of this story say Katle, that he in fact did kill him. The Iko Diamri lo Katle, and other versions have it otherwise, that he did not kill him. So that's the end of the bracketed section, in which you can see Rav Dimi's point was how significant it is to be diligent in teaching children, because if you teach them a mistake, the mistake will stick. In this case, Yoav had absorbed in a mistaken fashion the lesson, and the teacher, the educator, wasn't diligent in scrutinizing the children's level of accuracy, of precision. And is as a result of that, the mistake that Yoav learned in his youth, Kivan to all, it got stuck in his mind and became part of his understanding with the catastrophic results. Now we continue with comments made by Rava regarding education, etc. Yoma Rava, Makri Yanuka, Shaslo, Tabcho, Vumno, Vesefer Masa, Kulan, all of these professions are kemusrin v'oyim deninu. Musrin, as from the word hasra, means warned. They're considered as if pre-warned. In the event that they mess up, they can be removed from their job with any prior warning. Klola de Milsa, the rule upon which this list is based, called Pseida de Lohodar, any irrecoverable loss, Musra V'Oimid, who is considered pre-warned. Now, in this list we saw Makri Yunuka, a child teacher. Now, in what respect do we say it's a Pseida de Lohodar? So, we'll see a discussion about that in Tosfos, and it's important to note, and we'll, Mirtz Hashem, note it again, that this is part of a list featured by Rava. So there's some aspect of Makri Yanuka that is a Pseida de Lohodar, an irrecoverable loss. A Shaslaw is someone who's hired to plant trees. Tabcha, a slaughterer. Umna, bloodletter. And so for Masa, this is the subject of a discussion that we will see in the Tosfos. All of these are considered Musrin V'Omdin. You can see at this point that we have a slash mark indicating that which follows is a a brand new trend of thought. On the side of the Gemara, we have a nosei klali, a general topic heading, and we've written tacharut, competition, b'parnos, in matters of income, upsichas asokim, and the opening of businesses, competitive businesses. the issue of, let us say, opening up two cleaning stores on the same street. Is that acceptable? When there was an original cleaning store, and someone opens up next door another competition. Is that acceptable? So that's just by way of a superficial illustration. The Gemara will go through quite a few rules on this topic. Under our topic heading, the immediate topic heading, the Nosei Dino Shel Rav Huna, we feature Rav Huna's law. Ben Movui Ze Sheyesh Lo Esek Kayom, a member of a particular Movui. A Movui is a cul-de-sac. It's a maybe referred to as a dead-end street, which with courtyards opening onto it and houses opening onto the courtyards. A resident of that Movui that has a business. We'll see a Rechayim as a grindstone, grinds grains, producing flour for customers. So he has an existing business. Osur, afilu leben oisa mavui liftoach esek mitcharet. It is forbidden even for a fellow member of that mavui to open a competitive business. Competitive in the sense competition. The Kavachomer, and all the more so, Shosu leben mavui acher levo lekan. And all the more so, it would be forbidden for an outsider, a member of another Mavui, to come here and open up a business. After we learn Rav Huna's din, diamonds will appear in the Gemara. Shlavim shel hityachasura Gemara le Rav Huna, stages of the Gemara's response to Rav Huna's teaching. Stage one, what you will see, Shnei Nisyonis L'Shayech Dinoi L'Mikiris Tanoim. There'll be two attempts. You'll see the word Lema, just by a quick glance at the Gemara text. See the Lema, let us say, and we'll trying to associate Rav Huna with Tanaic sources. The second stage will, in future, you'll see the word Mesve in a diamond, Makshe al Rav Huna. The Gemara will ask, will question Rav Huna. And the third stage, Tanoi, Dinoi Shel Rav Huna Shonu Machlikas Tanoim. The Gemara will show how Rav Huna's din is a Tanaic controversy. Now the Gemara, Om Rav Huna, Hai Bar Mavua, the Uki Rechaya, the member of a Mavui who set up a business to profit from, V'yosu Bar Mavua Chavrei V'ka Muki Gabe, and a fellow member of the Mavui, and I emphasize even a fellow member, and all the more so an outsider, who wants to set up nearby a competition grinder. Dina hu demakiv iluya, the law states that the original guy can prevent him. The Amale, with the claim, kol paskis le lichusi, you are stopping my income. You are interfering with my parnosa. Lemo misayale, can we say the following source supports Rav Huna? Marchike mitzudas tadog min adog kimloi ritzas adag. Vekamo, oma rabo ba Rav Huna ad parsa. The Tanaic source says that a fisherman that encounters nets that are spread out to catch fish, a fellow fisherman, competition fisherman, cannot set up his nets within the vicinity of the original nets. He must distance himself. Kimlo Ritzis Adag. And how much is that? How much is Kimlo Ritzis Adag? A parsa for meal, approximately 4 kilometers away. So what do you see? You see a Tanaic source that says competition cannot set up next door. The Gemara says this is not support to Rav Huna. This source represents a more serious situation than what Rav Huna describes. Shiny dogim, the case of the fish is different. Diyahavi siyara. That expression is best understood by going immediately to the Rashi. Before we look at this Rashi, we'll look at the Rashi Marchiken Mitzudas Adog Min Adag. Tzayet Shenosan Einov Bedag Ad Shiku Choro. A trapsman, a fisherman that noticed where the fish are, and until he, to the point that he recognized where the fish dwell, the chor, literally, their hole. Marchiken Shart Tzayet Mitzudasim Misham. Other fishermen must distance themselves. What's the message from that source? Well, all we see from here, Alpha Gav the Lo Zocha Bay, the Lo Mata Liyode, even though the first guy didn't catch the fish yet, he simply set up his nets. And this detail is of great significance. Let's read it again. Alpha Gav the Lo Zocha Bay, the Lo Mata Liyode, even though he didn't actually acquire the fish yet, all he did was set up traps. But we pointed out that he noticed where the fish dwell, so he's anticipating catching those fish. But even though he didn't get the fish yet, Marchiken Misham, we distance others. The Yomale, the first guy, can claim, the first fisherman with his nets claims, Kopasis Liusi, you're interfering with my livelihood. The Gemara then rejected that, and it said, we continue in the Rashi, Shaini Dogim Diyavi Seyora, Noisnim Ayin Bahabotam. The fish look. They have a range of vision. Liois regilin lorutz lemokaim shero shalmezonis. They return to places that they originally saw food. So if we call that the bait, possibly that they have a location where they have their food source. Could be natural food source. And they always return to that spot. Hilkoch kevon shihikyu ze chirei. Once the fisherman, we'll call the original fisherman, noticed that the nosan mitzuda umazonos besoch lo ritzaso, and the fisherman, again the first guy, he placed his nets, and here we can speak about bait, the mazonos that he places there in that area. In other words, in their swimming course, their swimming path, if you will, he puts the bait in the path to their natural food source. Batuahu, he is certain shil kidenu that he will catch those fish. Tahavilei, and as a result of that, it's commanded motel yode. It's as if he's already in possession of the Vinimtsa Chaveru Maziko. Now, as a result of that, when the second guy puts his nets in the immediate vicinity, he doesn't distance himself like required. It's a type of sure damage. Let's repeat the main point. Since the first guy, as far as he is concerned, it's as if he is already in possession of them. This second guy putting his nets there, it's as if he's taking away something that the first guy is already in possession of. That's as far as the fish story is concerned. Aval hocha. But in the case of the grindstone or the store, mi shebo etzli yavo, mi shebo etzlicho yavo. The second guy can say, whoever comes by me, comes by me. Whoever comes by you, comes by you. In other words, you don't have any sure claim to customers that people will certainly come to you. Whoever comes to you, comes to you. Whoever comes to me, comes to me. So that from the fish Tanaic source, you can't conclude Rava's din. We continue in the Gemara. Omer le Ravina le Rava. Lema Rav Huna Diomaka Rebbe Yehuda. Can we say that Rav Huna, who's an Amora, is based on the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda? Now, in saying this, he's also saying he's like Rabbi Yehuda, not like the Rabbonon. I would say on most occasions when you see a Gemara like this, shall we say that Rav Huna is then a minority, is based on a minority opinion. The Gemara will respond and say, not so. Rav Huna is, would be acceptable by all Tanoim in this, as far as this source is concerned. But what does it say? Disnan, Rav Yudah Omer, Lo yichalei chenvoni kloyus vegoizim, l'tinoikos, a store owner shall not divide out, distribute roasted grains and nuts. In our terms, you might say, give out candies to the children. Now, the children referred to here, made reference to in the earlier Gemara, children sent to stores. At the end of our previous shiur, when the Gemara raised a seeming contradiction between the Reisha and the Seif of the Mishnah, we described children representing or being the customers of stores. And the Havamina we had in the Gemara there was that the neighbors, the people, cannot object to the children coming to buy things. So you see that children were sent by their parents, as we saw in our previous year, to buy things from stores. What is Rebuta describing? Don't try to bait the children. Don't give them candy so they should come to your store. And if you look in the Rabbeinu Gershom, further down, we have a little star in the Rabbeinu Gershom, the lower part of the narrow lines. He says, the other store members could say to this guy, you know, you're taking away the children from coming to us. You're baiting them and interfering with our livelihood that way. So Rav Yudah is, let's say, reflective of Rav Huna's point of view. The Chachomim Matirin. The Chachomim argue with Rav Yudah. They say, no problem if a particular store owner wants to bait the kids to come to him and seemingly take away the parnosa from the others, that's okay. So shall we say then that Rav Huna, the Amora, is supported only by Rav Yudah, which is a minority opinion? The Gemara says no. Afilu Teimor Rabbanan. Rav Huna, who spoke about the restriction upon opening up a competition grinder, can agree with the Rabbanan. In other words, the Rabbanan in this Tanaic source would not disregard Rav Huna's din. Ad kan lo pligi Rabbanan alei de Rav Yudah hasam. Up till now, the Rabbanan argue with Rav Yudah over there, and they will say they allow competition in that sense in the distribution of things to the children. Elo di omar lei ano ka mafgino agozi. A store owner that wants to say distribute the roasted nuts to the kids. I'm giving them nuts. I plogi shviski shivsiki. You give them almonds. In other words, just like I'm giving them stuff, you can give them stuff. If it's a question of baiting children, we're on equal footing. Avol haha. But in Rav Huna's case, with regard to someone who was an original grinder for the community, he set up. He was the sole grinder in that immediate vicinity. Afilu Rabbanan Modu. Even the Rabbanan would agree. The Yomale, the first guy, can say to someone who wants to set up competition, Kopaskisle Lechiusi, you're interfering with my income. Mesve. Now the Gemara challenges Rav Huna. Whereas a moment before we said that maybe Rav Huna is only a minority, is supported by a minority Tanaic source, and we deflected that particular question. Here we're now going to ask on him from a Tanaic source. Aisa Adam Chanus Bitzat Chanus Shachavero. A person is allowed to open up a store next to a fellow store owner, umerchatz bitzad merchatz shchavero, and a bathhouse a bathhouse was a source of income for people, and one can open up a competition bathhouse next to his friend's merchatz. V'eino yochol limchos biyodo, and he cannot challenge that. Second guy can say, you're to the first guy, you're doing your business in your domain, I'm doing my business in my domain. Well, that seems to be against Rav Huna. The Gemara responds with that, Tanoihi. The issue is a machloikes tanoim. And here we will see that in the following source. At the end of this source, you can see we've underlined Rav Shmuel Gamliel's name. He will be the source of support for Rav Huna. It says in this source, Kaifen b'nei mevuos ze'ezet, sheloi lahoishiv b'neim. Now the term b'nei mevuos is a reference to members of different mevuos. In other words, if there's someone from an outside mavui that wants to open up a business, we'll say call it mavui number, a member of mavui number two that wants to open up a business in mavui number one, the members of mavui number one can say to that outsider, "You are not allowed here. You cannot open up over here." I want to point out, in anticipation of the Gemara later, Rav Huna Brevi Yeshua, that's, by the way, not the Rav Huna that we're dwelling on now, but a different Amora, a later Amora, and it's important for me to emphasize he is a generationally speaking, historically speaking, a later authority. He will raise an issue of uncertainty regarding the explanation of this line. Is when we speak about mevuos, is it only a member from another town that comes to this particular mavui that's restricted, or does it mean even members of the same town but simply from a different mavui that can be restricted? So the issue, let's say, clarifying this line will be brought into question later. In the meantime, though, members from an outside place can be prevented by the locals. That's Kaifen b'nei mevuos ze'ezet, shelo lahoshi b'neim, not to allow an outsider to come lo chayet, not to come as a tailor, velo bursiki, a tanner of leather, velo melamed tinoikis, and not a child teacher, velo echod mibnei ba'alei umenios, and not and for that matter all other professionals. Ulishchenoi eno kafeu. And here we want to take special note: a member of that same mavui cannot be prevented. And again, Rav Huna Brev Yeshua will raise the doubt. When we say ulishcheno eino kafeo, what does that mean? Shcheno? Does it mean who cannot be restricted? Does it mean a member of that very specific mavui cannot be prevented by a fellow member of the mavui, or does it mean shcheno include a member of another mavui but from the same town? So that issue of another mavui in the same town is, we'll call it, a vague area as far as Rav Huna Brev Yeshua is concerned. But we want to emphasize this much, that Lushcheno Eino Kofeo, that's not like the Rav Huna at the beginning of this sugya. Because Rav Huna of this sugya said competition business cannot be opened up by even a member of that very same mavui. Needless to say, an outsider certainly can be prevented. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel Omer aflu shcheno kofehu. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, even shcheno, even his neighbor from the same mavui, can be prevented from opening up competition. And that is like Rav Huna. And as mentioned previously, we're now introduced to Rav Huna Braid of Yeshua. Do not confuse him with the Rav Huna from before. On the side, we have as our topic heading and structural note, the topic is, like we saw before, Tacharut, competition by Sokim in business. And we have a double underline, Rav Huna Braid of Yeshua, Shnei Hatzavos, Pshita Lei. The two, we'll say, ends or two extremes, that's clear. Mi Sheba Litcharois. Number one, Meir Acher Asur Lo. Someone who comes from another city, Meir Acheres, he certainly can be prevented. Meoisa Mavui Mutalo. Someone from that very same Mavui is allowed to open up competition. Boile, and you'll see the word boy is, we have in our Gemara, we've used a dot underline to highlight the words pshita, that which is obvious, and boy, that which is doubtful or questionable. Boy le matzav beinayim, the interim situation is raised as a question. May oisi, a member of the same town, avol mimovuyacher, but from a different alley, a different cul-de-sac. We now turn to the Gemara. Omar Rav Huna Brev Yeshua, pshita li, it's clear to me. Bar Masa Achriti, a member of this town, regarding the member of another town, Motzi Ma'akev, can prevent the outsider from coming in to open competition. Vishayach Bekarga Dehocha Lo Motzi Ma'akev. If I will say a resident of another town pays Targa. Targa is the local taxes. Member, resident of town B pays taxes in town A, then members of town A cannot prevent him. We're going to see more refinement of that. Who cannot prevent, who exactly cannot prevent, but the point that we're going to just reiterate now is that an outsider's payment of taxes to a particular locale grants him rights with regard to that particular locale. Another point that Rav Huna Braid Rav Yeshua finds clear is Bar Mavua Denavshe Lo Motzi Ma'akev. A second member of the same Movui cannot be prevented by the first member of that same Movui. That would be like the Shita of the Rabbonon we saw before. Boi Rav Huna Braid Rav Yeshua Bar Mavua Achrino Mai. The member of a different Movui, can he be prevented by the store owner of this Movui? The two Mavuis are in the same town. Can the member of a second Movui be prevented from opening competition in the first Movui? Teku, that remains unresolved. A new marking appears, a volcano shape, highlighting the word Modi or Modep. And on the side, we've indicated Shnei Mikrim. We'll see two situations, Shishitos de Liel, where opinions that we've seen till now, Moidim Shalocha Yeshina Ulukula, where the halacha will be different than was stated previously because of the new situation or the new point. And you'll see leniency in these two halachas. Umoidi Rav Huna. Now, Rav Huna, you can use your arrow that you see to the side of the Gemara, appeared at the beginning of this particular sukya, the original Rav Huna, who was Machmir, who was restrictive even upon a fellow Mavui member, for preventing fellow Mavui member from opening competition. Rav Huna concedes, B'makri dardiki de lo motzi ma'akev. That if there's a competition school, Makri dardiki, children educator, child educator, if he wants to start a school or tutorial business, the original child teacher that's there cannot prevent the second guy from opening up shop. The Omar Mar, we continue at the top of Omid Beis. The printer's bracketed section is not to be read. Tosis will explain why we're not reading this. So we continue at the top of Omid Beis. Kina Seifim Tar B'Chochma. This we saw actually quoted earlier. The jealousy of scholars promotes wisdom, so that when a competition Torah education setup opens up, that will serve to increase the level of Torah learning on all parties, so that in this particular case, Rav Huna, who was restrictive with regard to opening competition, not so when it comes to Torah education. Omar Rav Nachman Yitzchak Moide Rav Huna Rav Yehoshua. Now let's review the point that he made before. Rav Huna Rav Yehoshua, even though he was, let's say, more lenient with regard to opening competition, he had his point of restriction as well, namely, member of town number two cannot open up shop in town number one. Even so, Rav Huna Rav Yehoshua will say concede to leniency. Beroichlin amachzirin bayoros de lo motzi ma'akev. Rochlim are vendors of perfumes and cosmetics for the benefit of women who circulate between communities, so that even if you happen to have a local cosmetic shop, a traveling salesman from another community can come into this community where there's a pre-existing shop and sell his merchandise, and that the pre-existing shop in this community cannot be knocked, cannot stop him. The Omar Mor, here we have a Tanaic source. Ezra Tikein Lehem LeYisrael. Ezra, who was the leader of the Jewish community in the rebuilding of the second Beis HaMikdash period of time, he established Shiroichlin Mazim Bayoros, that there shall be traveling salesmen, again, regarding the sale of perfumes and cosmetics, Kedeshu Tachshitin Mitzuyim Levnois Yisrael, so that cosmetics shall be and jewelry shall be available to the Jewish women. And this was all, of course, with the idea of promoting harmonious domestic relations, and that consideration is even greater than the issue of competition. Fahani Mili, but even though you have this leniency, there is a restriction, and that is the laduri, avaladburi lo. As the name indicates, traveling salesman, he has a right to come into town and sell his wares. Laduri. Rashi says lechazer lesabe b'mevuos iru b'botim al kol roitzer liknos rachrin yoshev liro. He can go into different alleyways, different houses, to sell his wares, but then go back home, and he's not allowed to set up a shop, being that he's from a different community. That's avolakbuye lo. However, v'itzum rabbonenhu, if this particular vendor of jewelry and cosmetics is a Talmud Chacham, and he's coming from another community, so community from town B, and he's coming into town A, he has a right, even to set up shop. Rashi explains, Vitzumar Bonanhu, the Torah Begirsa, he's a Talmud Chacham, and as such, he is involved with his Torah learning. It's not customary for him to travel from one street to another street, one door to another door. He has a right to open up a shop. a cosmetic shop, he'll sit behind the counter and with his sefer, with his Torah learning, and people will come to him. And we're saying, even though he's from a different community, but he's from town B, coming into town A, and opening up a jewelry shop, cosmetic shop, he's allowed to do that. Kiha de Rava, Shara Lahu le Rav Yoshio, le Rav Avadya, Lagbuye, de Lo Kilchisa. Rava allowed these two personalities, Rav Yoshio and Rav Avadya, to set up shop, even though they're from a different town. Now, the expression de Lo Kilchisa means not following, quote, not in accordance with a standard letter of the law, but Lifni Mishras Adin, my time, a why, in their case, did Rava allow it? Kivin de Rabbanan Inu, also the Tadu Migirsayo, since they are Torah scholars, if they wouldn't be allowed to open up a shop, that would diminish the time available for their Torah studies. At this point in the Gemara, we turn to the Tosfos back on Chof Aleph, Omid Aleph. Tosfos Dibur HaMaschil Zochur Oiso Ish L'Toiv Yoshua Ben Gam L'Shmol. This refers to the Gemara three lines from the top of Daf Chof Aleph Omid Aleph. We mentioned that he was the one that instituted child education, Torah education in each community. And Tosfos makes a, we'll say, a historical remark. Who Oisoi, the Omer of Yosef, this Yeshua ben Gamla is the same one that Rav Yosef in Maseches Yevomis says, Tirkeva de Dinri, Ailo Le, Marta Bas Baisis, Liana Yamelech. Tirkeva is a particular measure of Dinri coins, were paid by this individual, Marta Bas Baisis. She paid King Yanai this money, Ad Oikim Yeshua ben Gamla, Bekani Ravavi. In order to influence King Yanai to appoint Yeshua ben Gamla as the Kohen Gadol. And here is the main point. The Tzadik Gomur Hoya. He was a totally righteous individual. Kiddush Kohen Hocha. As you see over here, he was so concerned with the education, the Torah education of Jewish children, a clear indication of his righteousness. V'ha dekomar hasam, it says there in Maseches Yevomis, katir ka chazina hacha. The word katir is translated, without the literal translation, it's a reference to a conspiracy. The purchasing of the office of high priest, of Kohen Gadol, for someone, appears to be conspiratory. So does that not bring into question the man's righteousness, that he gained office through someone paying for him to occupy that position? So Tosfos points out, there were others that were more important, maybe more fit for that position of Kohen Gadol, and they did not receive the appointment. He did, because money was paid for it. So in that sense, the Gemara can say, Katir kachazina hacha, this appears to be a conspiracy, but that doesn't detract from the man, from his own, from Yeshua ben Gamla's own righteousness. That the fact that someone else, let's say, bought the office for him, and he then proceeded to serve in that capacity, as we say, that doesn't detract from the man's own righteousness. Why the position had to be put, so Tosfos says, because there were others that were actually more fit for that position. We continue with the next Tosfos, Dibur HaMaschil Ve'li Madetem. This refers to the Gemara, seven lines from the top. And at this point, the Gemara had said that before Rav Shua ben Gamla came on the scene, it was perceived that fathers would teach their children. And that was from the pasuk that we say in the Kriya Shema, "V'limadetem oisom." It goes on to say, "V'limadetem oisom es b'nechem ledaber bom." And the Gemara darshened, "V'limadetem atem." In the Torah, the word is written without vowelization, so you could, and in the absence of the vav, you have the letters aleph, tof, mem, and the pasuk is then saying, "V'limadetem atem." You shall teach your children. The way we actually read it, oisam means oisam is a reference to them, the children. But atem would be a reference to the fathers. That you, the fathers, are to teach the children. Yesh sforim de lo garsi v'limadetem atem. There are versions of Gemara that don't have that drosha. And vidorish, but rather they explain that the original thinking was that a father is obligated, midichtiva limadetem, just from the suffix, the tuf mem ending of that word, the limadetem, mashma, atem be'atzmechem, that you on your own, you fathers on your own, are to teach them, and osam, the children. So you can keep the same, the reading as it is, also meaning the children, and from the word v'limadetem we get the idea that the fathers are the ones to teach the children. And we saw, of course, in the Gemara that concern arose for children who didn't have fathers to teach them what would be. We continue now with the next Tosfos, Dibur Maso Keben. Correction. Dibra Masel ki mitzion teitze soira. This refers to the Gemara nine lines from the top, where the second stage takona for children education was that fathers would take their children to Jerusalem. Tosfos here deals with the significance of why Jerusalem was chosen as the educational center for elementary education. The child would see in Jerusalem a high level of sanctity. The Kayanim Oiskim Bavoida, of course, needless to say, we're talking about the time the Beis HaMikdash was still around. We're dealing with a time that preceded Yehoshua ben Gamlu, who served himself as a Kohen Gadol. So, of course, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, the Kayanim were involved with the Avodas HaMikdash, and the child would see that. That would motivate the child to increase his fear of God and the study of Torah, kid the darshinon b'sifri, as it says in the Medrash on Sefer Dvorim regarding Maiser Sheni. We quoted some pasuk fragments on the side of our marked Tosfos. The pasuk in Dvorim Perek Yudalet Pasuk Chav Beis says Aser Taser is called Tvu Azarecha, etc. And in Pasuk of Gimel it says, V'yochaltu fnei Hashem elokecha, etc. L'man tilmad li'yirah. And that's what Tosfos quotes now. Kedar Hashem b'sifri, L'man tilmad li'yirah. It's the eating of the Maaser Sheni in Jerusalem was with the anticipation that through that you will learn to fear God. And the Sifri says, Gadol Maaser Sheni shemevi lidei Talmud. Great is the mitzvah of Maaser Sheni, which was the meiser that one was obligated either to eat the fruits themselves or the money upon which the Kedushas Meiser Sheni had been redeemed and buy with that money food in Yerushalayim. L'fishoy oimei b'Yerushalayim at shiyocha Meiser Sheni shelo v'yoroya shikulam oiskim b'mlech ha-shamayim u'bavoida. And the owner of the Meiser Sheni who would tarry in Yerushalayim until he finishes all of the food, he would see how everyone around him is involved with heavenly work. Hayagam hu mechavein yira shemayim ve'oisei b'torah. He too would be motivated to increase his fear of God and the study of Torah. So, the one's presence in Yerushalayim, we learn from Ma'aser Sheni, would serve to increase one's Torah study and fear of God. And that was the motivation for establishing the Yerushalayim as the Torah center for elementary education, for the education of children. We now continue with the Tosfos Kibben. This refers to the Gemara, 16 lines from the top. Kibben Sheish, Kibben Sheva. This was already at the Yoshua ben Gamla stage of enactment. Kibench, why the two ages? It says 6 years, 7 years. So Tosfos explains, Kibben Sheish Bibori, if the child was of good health, start him off at six. And Kibben Sheva Bekochush, if he's Kochush, weak, so then start him off a little later, start him off at age seven. We continue now with the Tosfos Dibra Masel Bebatzir. This refers to the Gemara 18 lines from the top. We have in our Girsa Ad Shish. You're not going to see the word Bebatzir in our Gemara text, but it's the same idea. Tosfos says Bebatzir Mibar Shish, less than six, lo sekabel. This was the advice given in the Gemara, that under six, don't take him in. Don't take him into school. Don't accept him as a student. The hardest nan, Masechas Ovis. Ah, and yet we see in the ethics of our fathers, Masechas Ovis, it says, Ben Chomei Shonim Lemikra. At age five, he is to be instructed in Chumash, in Tanakh. So, how do you resolve the Mishnah in Ovis, which speaks about Ben Chomesh, with our Gemara, which says, do not take in as a student less than six? And yet, in Ovis, it says, at 5 years old, he's studying Mikra. So the Gemara answers, Bebori Legamri, if he's of exceptional, totally healthy, totally strong child, then 5 years old. Kid Omar Begsubis, as it indicates in Maseches Ksubis the following: Haloimed benoi pochos mi ben sheish, one who instructs his child at less than six. Rots acharov vienoi magioi. He will be in pursuit of his health. That's rots acharov, trying to enable the child to recover, to become healthy, and he will not be successful. The child will be sickly. The Ika Diamri, another version there in Ksubis. Chaverov Rotzin Acharov V'ein Magiyin Oisoi. The other version is that his friends, the child's friends, this is a child who started learning at five, his friends will pursue him to be wise like him in Torah knowledge, and they will not reach him. Well, with regard to these two, we'll say these two versions, the Gemara says, V'chavayu isnehu, both are present. This idea that both are there, meaning D'cholish V'gomir, Tosfos points out, that he'll be weak, you're starting him so early, at 5 years old, but he will also be very knowledgeable. V'iboyesemo. A second approach is as follows. Ho bekochush v'ho bebori. The possibility of the child being weak, if you're starting him off at five, that is if the child is himself kochush, a weakly kind of child. that he is going to be successful and not affected, that's Bibori, if he's a healthy type child. We continue now with the Tosfos Dibur HaMaschil, Echod Mibnei Mavui. This is a reference to the Gemara, 22 lines from the top of the Omid. We have a different girsa in our Gemara text, and that difference is really the theme of this Tosfos. Our girsa is Echod Mibnei Chotzer. Pirush Rashba de lo goras Mavui. The Rashba has as his girsa, like we have. It says lo goras Mavui elo Chotzer. It would be best for us to look back at the Gemara, where you'll notice in the middle of the Omid, it's at the first house marking after the brackets, the first Kashan Rova, it said Echod Mibnei Chotzer in our Gemara text, which is what the Rashba wants us to have. Shebikesh Lasois, and there was a list of professions, Roife, Uman, Gardi, Umlametinekis, and the conclusion of the source was Bnei Chotzer Ma'akvin Olav. So he Tosfos now justifies why it's important to have that girsa, namely Echod Mibnei Chotzer. Di Goras Movui, if you would have that girsa. And in a Mavui, there are a number of Chatzeros. And the topic under discussion was the issue of noise level. Can the neighbors object because of a noise level? If you would have in this source Mavui, it would be one member of the Mavui could object. Then that would be a problem, tikshi la'abaye. This would represent a problem for Abaye, who appeared on Chofamut Beis, two lines from the bottom. In Abaye's resolution of the Mishnah, where the Seifa of the Mishnah said that when it said Tinoikos, Shori, that there's no objection. That's what did Abaye say? That's b'chotzer acheres. If there's noise coming from children that are going in and out of a store, and the noise is coming from chotzer acheres, from a different chotzer, so members of this chotzer cannot object. I emphasize, cannot object to the noise coming from a different chotzer. And therefore, if you were to have as a girsa b'nei movui ma'akvin olav, members of the movui could be ma'akev, then you'd have a tanaic source saying that members of one chotzer could object to the noise coming from another chotzer. And Abaye says, not so, that the members of one chotzer cannot object to the noise coming from another chotzer. That's chotzer acheres. You notice that we have a bracketed section in the Tosfos. And we indicate in our note the following. The starred note reads, Sograyim l'shem dilug. Kedei lehokel al hakriya. These brackets are for initial skipping purposes to make the reading easier. Ulaafsher lirois tamsis hakushya beoifen miyadi, and to be able to see the essence of the problem in an immediate fashion. So let's do that together. If you would have as the girsa mavui. Then tikshi, we read already, tikshi labaye, deshori b'chotzer acheres, and we skip the brackets to the bottom line of and to the second to last line of the Tosfos, v'hacha asar afilu b'chotzer acheres. It means if you're going to maintain the girsa of mavui, that echod mibnei mavui, that means that the member of one chotzer could object to the noise coming from another chotzer because, well, they're in the same mavui. Elo, rather, the girsa should be echad mibnei chotzer goras, that a member of the chotzer is allowed to object to the noise coming from within that chotzer. Now, of course, we skipped a section of the Tosfos. Let's go over the bracketed section. As we said, the girsa should be echad mibnei chotzer, and the objection is going to come then from within that very same chotzer. Vehahi de oise adam chanus b'tzad chanus shel chavero. This is a reference to the Gemara on Omid Beis, 18 lines from the bottom. It says a person can open up a store. It says b'tzad chanus shel chavero. Now the store, the opening of the store is going to cause increased noise of people coming in and out. And at the beginning of our Mishnah, we said that you could object, and yet you have this quote saying that it's okay to open another store. So Tosfos comments this leniency. Shori nami l'cholapochus b'chotzer acher. That's a reference to a store being opened up in another chotzer. But as we said, a second store being opened up within the same chotzer, the halacha, as the reish of the Mishnah maintains, that they could object. The Rava nami, Rava, he had explained the seifa of the Mishnah differently than Abaye. He explained the seifa of the Mishnah with the tinoikis, being tinoikis shebeis rabon. Just to repeat, Abaye explained the heter in the seifa of the Mishnah was because it was tinoikis going in and out of stores, but in a chotzer acher. Hence, members of chotzer A cannot object to the noise coming from chotzer B. Rava said the heter of the seifa is talking about tinoikis shelbeis rabban in the very same chotzer. So Tosfos says, the Rava nami lo poligole. Rava doesn't argue with Abaye, namely that if the noise is coming from another chotzer, we'll say chotzer B, people in chotzer A cannot object. Rava agrees with that. So then, why did Rava give a different explanation to the seifa? Elo, de muki masnisin de sharia v'oise chotzer. He was able to find a leniency for noise emanating from within the same chotzer and still no allowance to object. That the leniency applies to the noise coming from within that very same chotzer. Why can they not object? Because you're dealing with children that are there for the study of Torah. As far as noise from customers coming in and out of a store, so if the noise is coming from a store within that chotzer, so they can object. If the noise is coming from a store in the neighboring chotzer, so members of this chotzer cannot object. And then, as we read before, if you're going to have as your girsa echad mibnei mavui, v'hachosar afila b'chotzer acheres, there would be a restriction on noise coming even from another chotzer, and that would be problematic for Abaye. Elo, rather, the girsa should be echad mibnei chotzer goras. And if it's a member of the same chotzer, so then our Gemara, which said at the end of that particular Tanaic source, ma'akvin olav, is in conformity to that which we saw in the Reisha of our Mishnah. And when we said the difficulty for Abaye, we're not saying that that to the exclusion of Rava, as Tosfos indicated that Rava in effect agrees with Abaye. We continue now with the next Tosfos, Dima Maschil Ligardi. Vigardi, I should say. a reference to the Gemara 23 lines from the top. We saw in the Tanaic source that we just referred to before, one of the members of the Chotzer could object. So that's the Echod Mibnei Chotzer can object to someone opening up a weaving shop. V'im Tomar. But actually, before we go on with the Tosfos, let's glance at the side. We have a Taktzir, which says as follows: Tosfos Makshe Loma Begardi Ma'akvin Olav Mibnei Koil. Why, when it comes to a weaver, can an objection be raised because of the noise? Mashen Kein Bebal Rechayim Upatish, as opposed to the grinder or someone hammering away, where we said that they cannot object. Now the Tosfos. V'im Toimar Umay Shno Gardi Mibal Rechayim. What's the difference between the case of Gardi, the weaver, where the Mishnah, where the source we just read indicates Ma'akvin Olav Mibal Rechayim, from the case of the grindstone, Disnam Nasis, and the Ein Yochol Limchos Biado V'Lomar. Another member of the Chotzer cannot object and say, Eini yochol lishon mikol horechayim mikol apatish. I can't sleep because of the grindstone noise, nor the noise emanating from the hammering. So, weaver were restrictive, rechayim and patish not restrictive. Why? Why the difference? As you look ahead in the Tosfos by way of markings, you'll notice we have a lot of markings. And on the side, under our Mivnei, our structural note, we indicate that these shapes, the volcano shape, the diamond, the crown shape, simunim, these markings, kedei litzor kesher im haemshech, to enable you to make a connection between that which you see now and that which will appear later. Another marking, the double underline that you see, is highlighting a distinction made between oisil atzmo, someone has an operation that's strictly for himself, not for business purposes for the public, but it's all for himself, versus oisil achirim. We will see a triangle highlighting shnei mikrim shemehem makshim al hatshuva horishona, two cases which represent a question for the first answer that appears in the Tosfos. So now we have, just to restate the problem, we see restriction with regard to Gardi, we see leniency with regard to Rechayim and Patish, v'yesh lomar. We answer, the Masnisen, the Mishnah in which we said you cannot object to the Patish and the Rechayim, b'oisil atzmo, he is working for himself. Meaning private. He's not in service of members of the area. Strictly in his own house. Private. The Hacha, the Tanaic source where we saw that you can object with the Gardi restriction, there it's because Begardi Ha'oisil Achirim. It's a weaver who has a shop to service the public. You have customers going in and out, and that is the basis of the neighbor's objection. So, in the case of oisil atzma, you don't have nichnasim yotzim. So you're working for yourself. It's private noise, private preoccupation. You don't have the issue of customers coming in and out. It's the noise. It's not the objective noise that is the issue, but it's specifically the noise generated by customers coming in and out. And that conforms to what we saw in the Reisha of our Mishnah. Ve'im Toimar, you might ask, and note that we have quite a long question ahead of us. Ve'im Toimar, ho amrinon besomuch. This is a quote from the Gemara on Omid Beis, 13 lines from the top. Hai bar mevua, duki rechaya v'chulei. A person who set up a grinder, and it's for the public. Dinahu, de ma'akev Olé, we'll say the neighbors can object. Mishum de Omar Le Kopaskis Lechiusi. The objection is because of interfering with Parnosa. That was the second sugi that we saw in today's Gemara. An objection can be raised to the setting up of the Rechayim because of the second Rechayim cannot be set up because it would interfere with Parnosa. Mashma di lav mishum de kopaskis lechiusi. It appears from that that if not for the issue of interference with income, he would have been able to set up that grinder, afagav de oisel achirim, even though he is servicing others. So you can infer from the Gemara on Omid Beis is that if it were not an issue of, let's say, parnosa interference, you could have an establishment, a grinder establishment, that's oisel achirim. Now, notice we dot underline that phrase, oisel achirim. You can compare that with the dot underline above. We saw above, oisel achirim, once you're servicing the public, that was the basis of restriction. Here, through the inference that we're making, namely, if it were not for parnosa consideration, even though you're in service of the public, it's okay. The only objection that we saw in the Gemara on Amud Beis was interference with parnosa. Remove that factor. It's okay. The issue of noise would not be the basis of objection. So Eisel Achirim right now, as the reason for restriction, is being brought into question. Ula Kama Nami, on Omid Bey's 18 lines from the bottom, Tanya, it said, Oisa Odom Chonus Bitsad Chanusa Shel Chavero. The idea of setting up a store is, you're setting up a store for the sake of the public. It's Oisa Lachirim. And it said in that source, that you can do that. You can open up a second store, we'll say, that, concerning the issue of competition, without getting into the details, that's that later sukkah, but you see a Tanaic source allowing the opening up of a store, the afal gav de'ika nichnosim v'yoytzim tuva, even though there are going to be a lot of nichnosim v'yoytzim. Notice you have the crown marking. You can compare this with the crown marking above, where the Nichnasim V'yotzim was the basis of restriction. Here we have a Tanaic source featuring Nichnasim V'yotzim, and it says it's allowed. V'doichik l'chalek, and if you, it's only with difficulty that you would be able to make a distinction, meaning don't make the following distinction. The Hasam, the reason for leniency over there in the source, the reason for leniency is because Dasam Kfar Yesh Yotzin V'Nichnasim L'Chaim Arishon L'Chanus Arishon. In the objections that we were just featuring, the reason for the leniency in the last two triangle cases was because you were dealing with the opening up of a second operation when a first public operation was already there. So that you could say, you might have wanted to say, and Tosfos said, do not say this, that, well, since there was already Yotzim v'Nichnasim, therefore we can be lenient. Don't suggest that as an answer, as a distinction. So Tosfos remains, and that's why you can see we're here at the end of the long question. How is it that earlier you said that when it's oisel achirim and you have nichnos v'yotzim, that's the reason for the objection to the gardi, when in these last two triangle cases you've got oisel achirim, which features nichnos v'yotzim, and we are lenient? Namely, you can't, no objection based on noise. V'yesh lomar. Now we have, we'll say, the first of two answers. The Hasam, the cases where you saw leniency, b'chatzar acheres shari. It was noise coming from a second chatzar, a neighboring chatzar. So members of chatzar number one cannot object to noise coming from chatzar number two. So that even when it said Aisa Adam Chanus Bitsat Chanusish Chavero, that was in the second triangle source, that the Chavero there meant in the same Movui, the same alleyway, but it was really from a different Chatzer. Inami, another approach. Masnisinami, our Mishnah, which featured the Heter for the case of Patish and Rechayim, and we saw in those cases of the hammer and the grinder, the inability to object, is in fact be'oisel achirim. It's, yeah, you're doing it for the public. Uberechayim uvekoil apatish ein nichlas v'yetzim kolkach. And even though you've got nichnas and yotzim there, the Mishnah still is lenient, because as far as crowds are concerned or frequency is concerned, it's much more limited. Why is that? Why is that different than the case of the chonus or the case of the gardi, where nichnas and yotzim was the basis of objection? Why? What's the difference? Because here it's not kolkach. Sheneisim lo pam achas v'teichin. When it comes to a person who needs, let's say, a grinder, he gives a lot of flour, a lot of grains in one shot, and that's it. You're not going to see him for many months, so you don't have any high level of regularity. It's a one time deal. So you give it one time, a lot of grains. He grinds, and you have a large supply of flour. Avol begardi, with regard to the weaver, where there was objection, where an objection can be raised. Yesh harbe yotzim nichlasim sharbe mevi'in lo mitveh. There you have a lot of a lot of customers going in and out, because people bring their spun wool for his weaving it into fabrics. I just want to point out the functionality of some of these markings. The last we saw a trapezoid or volcano shape just now, second line from the end. Align this with the first time you saw that. In the first part of the Tosis, the attempt was to say that the Mishnah regarding the Patish and the Rechaim was Boisil Atzmo. Here, referring to the same case, our Mishnah, and you notice the double underline. You saw above Oisil Atzmo here, Oisil Achirim. So the very same case in the first part of the thesis, the Patish and Rechayim was Oisil Atzmo, and in the second approach, the Patish and Rechayim were in fact Oisil Achirim, and still there's leniency, based on what we emphasize now, is that in those cases you have it's Ein Nifnasa V'yotzin Kol Kach. We continue now with the Tosfos on as far as our PDFs are concerned. It's the second PDF of the Tosfos for Chof Aleph Omid Aleph. Dibra Maschil Veloy. This is a reference to the Gemara, 14 lines from the bottom. It said in this source, Lo Yaski Renu, and amongst the different examples, it said, V'loy L'Sofer Armoy, not to rent your property to a Sofer Armoy. That would mean a Sofer who is an idol worshiper. This Tosfos deals with a topic that's found in a more elaborate form in Maseches Avodah Zarah. And on the side, we have under our taktzir, under our summary, Haskoras Mokum Lakum, the issue of renting property to an idol worshiper. And so, in our sukya, in the source, it appeared that the only objection to the Sefer Moed was the issue of the noise. Mashma, the in lo hoya sefer, if it wasn't an issue of a sefer who deals with the public, it would have been allowed, one would have been allowed to rent the facility, the house, the apartment to a private idol worshipper. Ah, bim tomar. I'm reading the Gezel Basra. It says in the at the end of Masechus Bava Kama, in Perek HaGezel Basra, Hai Bar Yisrael Dezoven Le'ara Le'oved Kechavim Amitzro De Bar Yisrael Chavrei. A Jew who sells his property to an idol worshipper. And now the property that was owned by the Jew had a Jewish neighbor. So now what's the situation we're creating? We're creating a situation where an idol worshipper is now going to be the neighbor of the of that that second Jew. One who sells property to an idol worshipper that borders on property owned by a Jew. We excommunicate the seller. The neighbor can object to this on the grounds of Arya Arvis Amitzroi. You're having a lion lay on my border. The reference to the idol worshipper viewed as a source of trouble for the Jew, the Jewish neighbor. It's like you're having a lion come to lie on my border. It's only with difficulty that one would try to make a distinction. In other words, don't make the distinction between the Gemara Bava Kama, which speaks about a sale and hence prohibited, and in our Gemara we're dealing with a rental, and hence if not for the noise factor it would have been okay. Don't make that distinction between Mecher and Schirus. So we're then back at the problem. If you're not going to make that distinction, why in our Gemara do we see leniency, and there in the case of Bava Kama we see restriction? V'nira l'rit the Hassam, as far as there in Bava Kama, Kishi Yisrael Rotzo Liknois. That's a case where there was another customer, not just the idol worshipper, there was another Jew who was interested in buying the property, and our seller opted to sell it specifically to the idol worshipper, and in over choosing to sell it to the Jew. In a case like that, the seller is worthy of excommunication. You have a man that needs to sell his property. There's no Jew that's interested in buying. It would be permissible, and we wouldn't excommunicate a person who happens to sell it to an idol worshipper. We continue with the next thesis, Dibur Maschil B'Sofer. B'sefer Masa. When we were learning the Gemara, we mentioned that there would be a disagreement between Rashi and the Rabbeinu Hananel. I should point out that this is a reference to the Gemara 13 lines from the bottom, at the point that we defended Rova from the question raised in the Tanaic source, where you can't rent out your house to a sofer Yehudi, which implied the objection of renting it for Malamed Tinaikis, and yet Rava said it's mutter. So the Gemara said we're dealing here, the objection is in a case of Sefer Masa, where the noise level would be too great. And we turn to the Tosfos. Ein nira lefarish kapirush hakuntres the Sefer Masa in Malamed Tinaikis shel kol year, deika kol gadol. it doesn't appear that we should accept Rashi's pshat that the Sefer Maaser referred to here is the municipal, the town, as opposed to the neighborhood Malamed Tinaikis. This is the city Malamed Tinaikis. And what's the problem? Because there's Kol Godol. It's an exceptionally large amount of noise. Why should we not accept Rashi's pshat? Daha lekamon Omar Rava. Later, Rava himself says, Makri Dardiki v'Sofer Masa kemusrin v'Oimdin. Two separate, professions. A Makri Dardiki, an elementary Torah teacher, and a Sofer Masa. They are considered pre-warned. Well, if you were to accept Rashi's pshat, that the Sofer Masa is in effect a Malamed Tinoikis, Kevon Dashmina de Makri Dardiki Havi Pseda de Lohodar, once Rava would have told us that an elementary teacher is irrecoverable damage or loss, well then, Huadin Malamed Kol Tinoikis Ahir, the same would apply to a municipal child educator. V'amai itzturich su leminkat Sofer Masa. Why then repeat Sofer Masa? Why in the same breath would Rava, who's talking about Pseida de Lohodar, tell me that Mikri Dardiki is a Pseida de Lohodar and Sofer Masa is? It's obvious. Once you know that a Mikri Dardiki is Pseida de Lohodar, then if you take Rashi Pshat on Sofer Masa, it's basically the same thing, just in a larger volume. The pun, by the way, is fully intended there. So you have to say that Sofer Masa is something else. The ain the farish nami kapir shekunshus ba makabel Sofer Masa misaper anshiyer, and another a translation that we should not accept is the translation that Rashi gives in Maseches Bava Metzia, that what's a Sofer Masa? What does Rashi say there in Bava Metzia? A town barber. Daha kori le hocha bebraisa sofer. He is referred to by the word sofer, not sapor. Sapor would be the barber. So it's unlikely that Sofer Masa is a barber like Rashi tries to say in Bava Metzia. So what is Sofer Masa? Elo nire kemoshe bir shabenu chananel. Sofer Masa is what? Kaysif Shtoros Ha'ir. A Sofer Masa is one who prepares documents, legal documents. The municipal, we'll say scribe, scribe in the context of documents. And how is he to be, why then is he categorized as a Pseida de Lohodar? Ulochi Choshev Leg Lekamon. And for the following reason, we mention later that it's Pseida de Lohodar. Im Nichta Vashtar Shalokidin. If a document is written in an improper fashion, so you can have someone who claims ownership, let's say, to a piece of property based on a document that doesn't reflect the reality, that he's really not the owner of the property. Once the individual is holding such a shtar, the real owner is going to lose out. It's a loss that's irrecoverable. And hence the pshat of the Rabbi Nechanel, which presents the Makri Dardiki and a Sofer Masa as two distinctly different professions. We continue now with the next Tosfos, Mitakonas. This is a reference to the Gemara, 13 lines from the bottom. Mitakonas, Yeshua ben Gamlo Veilech. Lo mamtino yenuka mimasa lamasa. We saw in the list of teachings of Rava regarding education from the takona of Shua ben Gamla onwards, one is not to transport a child from one city to another. So the Taisu says, read the Dibar Masal again. Mitakona Shua ben Gamla mi'veilach lo mamtino. Yenuka mimasa lamasa kugoyin sheish kan chofhei yenuki. The in order for us to accept this halacha, we have to then make the assumption that in this town, where we're telling the father not to transport your child from town A to town B, because in town A, where you live, you have 25 children. In this town itself, you've got enough children to force the hiring of an educator, of a teacher. And if not, if you don't have 25 children in this town, so then you're saying he'll be transported then you'll have to transport the child to another town. Vim toimar, you might ask, ha ihave mamtinon luhu lamasachriti. If you're going to take this child to another town, itstarchu melamed b'fnei atzmon kevon diikol chof heyenuki. Well, in the second town, there's already a man employed to teach the 25 children that are there. Now, if you're going to bring this new kid to town, you're going to have to hire a new educator, another educator. VMK my nafgamina. If you're going to have to hire a new educator in the second town, so what difference does it make between bringing the child to a second town when you could have left him in the first town if you're going to have to hire an educator anyway? V'yesh lomar, the nafka mina, there is a point of difference. D'havu shnei melamde tinekis bidach masa, if in that second town there happen to be two teachers. Hayu yicholim lahoshiv chetzim b'fnei zeh v'chetzim b'fnei zeh. In a case like that, then you would take half of the children and have one teacher deal with them, and the second half of the group with the second teacher dealing with them. We continue now with the Tosfos Sach Mikri Dardiki, a reference to the Gemara, 9 lines from the bottom. Sach Mikri Dardiki Chof Heyanuki, the number of children is 25. Avo Pochos Mikan, less than 25 in that town. Ein B'nei Yuchaylin Lochuv Zeh Lahaskir Lohem Malamit. Then the townsfolk cannot force one another to impose upon one another the payment for hiring a teacher. So if you have the requisite minimum number, 25 children, then a forced imposed payment can be made. Now, you notice in our mark Tosis we have a slash mark. This the continuation, we made reference to this earlier, is referring to the Maisa at the bottom of the Omid with Yoav and his teacher, Pirush Rabbi Nachananel, the Rabbe Akre Zecher Kedin. The teacher had taught Yoav Zecher, the need to eradicate the memory of Amalek, and he taught him in a proper fashion, with a proper vowelization. Yoav himself made a mistake and read it as Zohar, referring to the males. And in the course of the Gemara, reference was made to Yoav's desire to execute the teacher because he was deceitful in his role as teacher. And the Gemara on Omid Beis quoted the pasuk Arur Oisem Melechas Hashem Remia. V'hainu Remia, and here Tosis explains, what's the deceitfulness in that case? After all, the teacher taught him properly. D'lo ashkech l'meida hechiav akor talmidei. The teacher was not diligent in verifying how the student would read it. V'chein nireh, and it's also most likely that that's the approach. Avalein nireh lefaresh. It's unlikely, it doesn't appear that one should explain Shigam Rabbi Tov Velimdoi Zohar, that the teacher himself had taught it in a mistaken fashion. Dim Kane, if that would have been the case, that the teacher himself had taught in an erroneous fashion, Lav Remiyahu, then it's the, you wouldn't describe that as deceitfulness. That you describe that as a mere mistake. The deceitfulness is, ironically, when the teacher teaches the proper thing and doesn't verify whether the student understood it properly or read it properly. Only then do we say that that's Meleches Hashem Remia. We continue with the thesis on Omid Beis, Dibur HaMaschil, Sofer. This is a reference to the Gemara 10 lines from the top, Sofer Masa, and we're going to go over some that which we actually saw very recently. I should just point out that the Gemara itself was part of Rava's list. The Sefer Mas was part of Rava's list of occupations that are Musun V'Oindin. And amongst them is Sefer Masa. Lo kamo shapiresh bekuntris kosef Sefer Torah betos. Sefer Masa here, Rashi says, what is the Pseidah de Lohadar? It's one who writes a Sefer Torah. He's a scribe. In this case, a scribe of holy scrolls, of Torah scrolls. He writes it with a mistake. The Ein Zeh Pseidah de Lohadar. That's not an example of an irrecoverable loss. If a Sefer Torah is written with a mistake, the Chayon Lagio, it can be corrected. So what's the Sefer Masa? Elokid Aprecious Liel, as we explained earlier, namely Tesis on Omid Aleph, Dibra Masa B'Sefer, in the name of the Rabbeinu Hananel. Kosef Shtoros, one who prepares documents, legal documents, and that's categorized as Musrin V'Aimdin, because it's Pseidah the Lohadar, as we explained, a person who is holding on to a legal document that doesn't reflect the reality of the situation. So he's causing an irreparable loss to the legitimate owner or the legitimate one entitled. We continue now with the next Tosfos, Dibur Masel U'Makri. This is the same topic, 10 lines from the top. Those that are considered Musrin V'Oindin, Makri Dari Pirush B'Kuntris B'Hamakabel. Now, we should point out before we go further that we have a Taktsir Mivneh comment, very brief comment, featuring the diamond marking. Deois B'Mau Pseidah de Lohadar B'Makri Dariki. What's the irreversible damage in the case, irreversible damage or irreversible loss in the case of a Makri Dariki, an elementary Torah educator? So, Tosfos mentions that Rashi in Maseches Bava Kama, Pirush Bekuntris B'Hamakabel, in Perek HaMakabel in Bava Metzia, to have a Pseida de Lohadra, Makri Dariki is called irreversible loss. Why? Mishum de Shabesh de Kiva de Ol. Once a mistake is learned, it becomes ingrained, and it's almost impossible to undo. So a Makri Dariki, according to Rashi in Maseches Bava Metzia, is called Pseida de Lohadar because of this. Kevan de Ol. The Kashelari, the Re points out an amazing difficulty here. The Ha Rava Gufe Isle Liel de Shabesh de Mamela Nafka. Rava himself, who is the author of this list, which describes the Mikri Dardik is a Pseidah Lohadar, Rava himself said, though, when it comes to mistakes are unlearned. They get filtered out in the course of time. That's Shabeshta. Memela Nafka, the Shabeshta, the mistake, goes away on its own. So, how could Rava describe Makri Dardiki as Pseidah de Lohadar because of Shabeshta Kiva de Ol? When Rava's attitude towards Shabeshta is different, Memela Nafka. It's like a it's a non-issue as far as Rava is concerned. The Oymeri, the Havib Seda de Lohodar, the Makri Dardiki is called irreversible loss. The Lo in the Oysishah Shemalame Lohem Tois at the time that the teacher is teaching a mistake, Haim Mrs. Botlin. The it's called let's say useless time, useless fulfillment. The oisasha ein yichon lachzilom. That moment, that time during which the mistake was being taught is irrecoverable. You cannot recover lost time. And from here, you see something of great significance, and that is that a mistake in Torah learning is called bitul mispatlin, what we refer to as bitul Torah. There is the Torah with its teachings of truth, and a mistake is not the truth. A mistake is by definition a mistake. It's not Torah learning. And one can come away with the following thought, that when one has an opportunity to learn Torah in a correct fashion, in a mistake-free fashion, and one does not opt to take advantage of that, and would rather learn Torah, attempt to learn Torah filled with mistakes, he is possibly speaking but guilty of bitul Torah. Once again, I qualify these remarks in the context where one has the option of gaining an immediate, accurate understanding of the Torah and opts not to take advantage of that and to learn with mistakes. He is not engaged in the study of Torah, but rather that's bitul Torah. There is much more to elaborate on this particular critical topic, but of course on some other occasion or in another context. We continue with the next Tosfos, Dibur HaMaschil, Shasla. Again, part of the list of Pseida de Lohodar, or Musrin Vioimed, the planter of trees, Shasla. V'im Tomer Mai Pseida Ika. What's the irrecoverable loss here? E Yafsid Yishalem. If there's some kind of loss, man was hired to plant trees, and he didn't plant the trees. And so the ground remains barren, causing a loss to the owner. So he will pay, he'll compensate the owner in cash. Why do you call it irrecoverable loss? Yesh lomar, d'eino mafsid, ela shepoishea, she'en hanetiyas gedelos kamo she'erulis degodel. What the Gemara is referring to is a guy who was hired to plant trees, and he planted trees, but he planted them in a reckless fashion, and they did not grow as best as they could. So in such a case, the owner is losing out, but at the same time he can't demand compensation when the man hired to plant the trees says, well, I planted the trees. We continue with the next Tosfos, Dibur HaMaschil Marchikin. This is a reference to the Gemara, 16 lines from the top, in the sugya of competition, the issue of restrictions on unfair competition. The Gemara cited the case of someone who wanted to bring support to Rav Huna, who said that you cannot open in the same chutzer a competition. Can you support him from the teaching regarding the spreading of the prohibition of spreading fish nets near pre-existing fish nets? That's Marchikin Mitzudas Adag. Af agav, the Rabbeinu Tam meforesh, the bedover shel hefker, afilu rosha lo mikri. If someone else comes along and takes for himself something that's unowned, so you have, we'll say, two people with their eyes on something unowned. Mr. 1 thinks he's going to get it, and Mr. 2 lunges forth and takes it. Mr. 2 is not called, he's not even called a Rasha. He's certainly not a thief, and he's not even called a Rasha, a wicked person. Kiddushan, and there are illustrations of this, of a second guy coming along and taking that which is Hefker when a first party was interested in that item. Number one, Gabi Peah. Peah is a tithe that's left to the poor in the corner of one's field, and essentially it's Hefker, it's unowned. What's the story? Pires Talisai Alea, someone threw his talis, his garment, on some Peah crops. In an attempt to acquire them by virtue of the fact that his talis is now upon those crops. So, what do we say? Mavirin oisoi mimeno. We will remove him from those crops and give it to the one who came along afterwards and picked them up. So you have two people competing for the payoff. One, Mr. One, attempts to acquire it through throwing his talis on it. Now, throwing one's talis is not a formal means of acquisition, but certainly we can see his intention. He thought he would acquire it that way. Someone else comes along and picks up the crops. The guy that came up picked them up. He gets it. He becomes the owner of it, and that's legitimate. We don't call him wicked. V'chein t'nan perakam lo v'metzia, and similarly in the first paragraph of Metzia, someone found an unowned item. A metzia, that's an example of hefker, something unowned. A found item without any identification marks and anything that would lead to establishing ownership. Someone sees a metzia. Again, we repeat, a form of hefker. And he lunged upon it. He fell upon it, thinking that that's a means of acquisition. Someone else came and slipped it out from under him. The one who took hold of it becomes the owner of a lo mikri rasha. We don't say someone is called a rasha. Ella be'oni hama'apich becharoro uvo acher ve'notla mishum shim lo yistakir b'mokim ze yinsa listakir b'mokim acher. There is a case of that's called Oni Mahapech Charora, a poor man who is literally he's turning around a loaf. And Oni is interested in buying a food item, and he's looking at it. Is it worth my buying it? Maybe not. Someone else comes along and swipes it away. That person, the one who swiped it away, is called wicked. And why is that? We say, if you don't find it here, you could have found it somewhere else. So something concerning which we say you could have found it somewhere else, why'd you take it from this guy? You could have found it somewhere else. You took it from this guy. Even though I think I mentioned a moment ago that the Oni had not formally acquired it, but his interest was inquiring. You came along and took it from him. That second party is called wicked. And that's what we've highlighted with our markings. You can see we've highlighted the term yimtza listake b'mokam acher. You could have literally profited, you could have found it in another place. Now, that analysis we can't apply to a case of mitzia or hefker. A found item is here. You're not going to get it somewhere else. Now, that's how the Rabbeinu Tam views contrasts the case of Hefker versus the case of Oni Amapi Harora. Now, what about the fish and the nets? V'hach shmeitza, our sukya of distancing the fish nets, lo kashya, doesn't represent a difficulty to Rabbeinu Tam. D'yafal gav, now here's, Tosis points out what might have been a point of difficulty, and he's going to say it's not. D'yafal gav, Davei Dover Shel Hefker. Something like that. We said that the second, what was Rabbeinu Tam's principle? That in a Dover Shel Hefker, the second guy that comes along is not called wicked. In other words, the second guy is not viewed as problematic. The fish are unowned, the Dover Shel Hefker, and yet we say that the second guy should not put his nets in the vicinity. Mikol mokoin. Nevertheless, the question then is why, in the case of the fish, are we restricting an individual in the realm of a Dover Shel Hefker? So Tosus explains, Mikol mokoin bekama mekoimus yimtza shiuchalifros mitzudaso. You can find other places where there are fish. And when you introduce that concept of you can find it somewhere else, then it becomes like the case of Oni Amapich B'Charora. And that's what we had highlighted before with the triangle. When it's Yimtza L'Sdake B'Mokam Acher and you take it anyway, you, that's wicked. And a second distinction between the case of the fish, namely, even though it's a case of Hefker, and ostensibly we shouldn't prevent the second guy from chapanarain, from taking, the first guy with his nets, that was his income, that was his profession, that was his parnosa. So the first guy that set up the nets, that's for, that was his parnosa, and it's not right for the second guy to come and be mafsik chiyusei, to interfere with the first guy's means of income. V'hod amrina b'per cheskes abatim nichsei knainim harehin kemidbar. Here we have an example where Tosis quotes a sukya. It's in a rather, in a highly abbreviated fashion. The case deals with a person buying property from an idol worshipper. Nichsei knainim. A Jewish customer comes and buys property from an idol worshipper. And he gives cash to the idol worshipper. And in the meantime, another Jew comes along and makes a chazoka, does an act of ownership on that property. We say the following: Nichsei knainim harehin kemidbar kol hamachzik bohen zocha bohen. Anyone who comes along and takes possession of property that an idol worshipper had just sold and got cash for, anyone who comes along, meaning we say anyone means to the exclusion of the guy that paid the cash for it, someone else who comes along and grabs it, takes possession of it, he becomes the legitimate owner of it. My time. Well, what's the explanation? What's the legal explanation behind that? Knaini mechimota zuzi liyodei istalikle. The idol worshipper, the Knaini, when he gets the cash, he's removed. He's out of the picture. For Yisrael, the guy that paid the money, lo kani adamoti shtor liyodei. He is not said to acquire it through the mere payment of the cash until he gets a title of ownership, until he gets a deed to the property. Now, we have to just present by way of background to understanding this, that you're dealing in a case, in a society, in a community, where the cash alone is not the basis of the acquisition, but rather the acquisition is dependent upon the receipt of the shtar. So the case we just described was a Jew had paid money to the idol worshiper, did not yet receive the shtar. Someone else came along and made a kinyan chazok on the property, did an act of ownership on the property. That second guy becomes the owner of it. Upirish Rashbam Hossam, the Rashbam there in the third parak of this Masechta, says, the Yisrael HaMachzik Rosha Miha Mikri. He might be considered the legal owner of it, but nevertheless, he is considered wicked. Ulapirish Rabbeinu Tam Afila Rosha Lo Have. According to the Rabbeinu Tam, that second guy that came along and took possession of the property, the very property that a first Jew had paid for, the second Jew that takes possession is not even a wicked party. Why? Based on the rule we said above. Kevon shelo yimtza b'mokom acher. This property is here. It can't be found somewhere else. Might be other properties available. This particular property is here. It can't be found somewhere else. Notice how we've used the markings. We have an inverted triangle over here. Above, you noticed where it said yintze l'zak mokom acher, where something is available somewhere else, you take it from the first party. That's the basis of classifying second party as a wicked individual. In a case where it's lo yimtze b'mokom acher, like we had above, the case of the hefker, the case of the mitzia, the pay of the mitzia, it's not nimtze b'mokom acher, you're not called a rosha. The kosha l'rashba. Notice we have a long question marking. So it's quite a lengthy question. The kosha l'rashba mehod yamar be'ezer neshech. He raises a question from something found in the fifth parak above Mitzia. Rav Mori Bar Rochel Mishkin Leahu Nochri Besa. Rav Mori Bar Rochel had loaned money to a Nochri, to an idol worshiper. Mishkin Leahu Nochri that we just read, that Nochri, that idol worshiper, gave Rav Mori Bar Rochel collateral. The Nochri borrowed money from Rav Mori, and in exchange, Rav Mori received from the borrower collateral in the form of a house. Ozal Rava Vizavne. Rava bought the house from that idol worshiper, from that Nochri, the Nochri that had a debt to Rav Mori. Well, Rava went and bought the house from that guy. Notar Tracy Achishasa, Rav Mori, he waited 12 months. Shoko Aga Besam Te Le Rava. After 12 months, Rav Mori took some cash, we'll call it rent money, and paid Rava rent. Omarle, Rav Mori said, Omarle, Hai de lo matoi lo, lemor agar besa ad hashto, that which I have not paid rent to you till now, in other words, for 12 months I didn't pay any rent, di omar mar, there is a teaching that says, stam mashkanta shosa, a mashkon, collateral that one has, when one receives property in as collateral, it's understood that you remain in possession of it for a year. And during that year, the one who borrowed money, that idol worshiper, he could not have legally removed me from the house. That's a presentation of the Gemara in Bava Metzia. Now, we started this section by saying that that the Rashba has a question, and now the Rashba's question. The Hashda kevon shekodma cheskas Rav Mori lecheskas Rava. Rav Mori's possession of the house preceded Rava's possession. Im kein zocha ba Rav Mori. Well, then Rav Mori becomes the legitimate owner of it. De nifse haknaini harein kamidbar. We said above that the property of the idol worshiper is like, literally speaking, like the desert. It's considered unowned. The question then is, why did Rav Mori bring rent payment to Rava? He's the legitimate owner. Now, here you're dealing with the case of Hefker. V'i Mikri Rasha, if the one who tries to take possession is considered wicked, then Osi Shapir Delohoya Roitza Liskoispa, then I can understand why Rav Mori didn't want to be the owner of it. After all, Rava bought the house from that idol worshiper that had borrowed the money. Rava bought the house. Rav Mori didn't want to be viewed as someone who takes possession. I should maybe say that from the context here, it appears that Rava paid money to the idol worshiper. And if you're going to say contrary to Ravenu Tam, that a person who takes something that's unavailable elsewhere, he would be considered a Rasha. So I understand why Rav Mori didn't want to press his ownership of it. Rava paid money for the house. He bought the house. Aval appears Rabbeinu Tam, Dafilu Rasha Lo Mikri. According to the Rabbeinu Tam, when you're dealing with something like Hefker, where it's not available somewhere else, and we said the Nifsei Knani, once the guy receives money, it's like Hefker. So the second party that comes to take possession of it is not called a Rasha. Amai lo zocha bo Rav Mori kevon dehetter gomer hu. Why does Rav Mori not gain ownership of it, total ownership of it? After all, he did something that's quite legitimate. Namely, even though Rava paid money for the house, Rav Mori was occupying the house for that first year. Why then does Rav Mori feel obligated to pay rent to Rava? So we have a couple of approaches. Number one, for Shema, Liftim Yishus HaDin Avad, could be that Rav Mori went beyond the letter of the law. That Rav Mori was not willing to take possession of it when he had legitimate rights to it. Again, that we said is Lifnei Mishuas HaDin Avad. Rava paid money for it. Ula Riva, Nira, a second approach. The Cheskas Rav Mori Lo Hoysel Abaturas Mashko. It's true that Rav Mori was there first, so to speak, in the use of the house, but his use of the house was in the context of mere collateral. For Rava Kona Bimenu Bishtar, the Zochabo, Rava, he acquired it in a full sense with a shtar. We didn't emphasize that earlier. It could be that the shtar came into the picture later, anyway, after Rav Mori was already there, but Rav Mori's initial presence was only as in the context of Mashko. Rava acquired it in a full sense. V'zochaba, v'acharkach nosan mois. According to Tosis over here, in fact, he bought it through the shtar method, and he gained total ownership, and only later did he pay money. So you don't you don't really have a stage at which the Nichsei Nochri is considered like Midbar. That description came up when the initial acquisition was through money. But here, the initial acquisition is through Shtar, so you don't have that interim stage. And hence, Rava's immediate association with the house was as a full owner. And that, that precluded Rav Mori, even though in terms of actual use of the house, Rava has full ownership of it. Rav Mori's initial presence, his whole presence was there, was only as a mashkal. We continue with the Tosfos Divrei Masel Tanoihi, a reference to the Gemara 14 lines from the bottom. Rav Huna in our Gemara spoke about the restriction upon a fellow Movui member of opening up competition. The Gemara pointed out that Rav Huna's din would be the subject of a machlokes tanoim. Tanoihi, tesanya v'chule. Tema l'Rashba. The Rashba has a question, a strong question. Damai lo maisi ha-mishne d'liyel. Why did the Gemara, if you want to say that the din of Rav Huna is a machlokes tanoim, the Gemara, instead of citing the Tanaic source, the Brisa that it cited, it could have cited the Mishnah above, 20 lines from the top, regarding the distribution of, bait for children to come to stores. And we saw Rabbi Yehuda being restrictive. Tosfos says the Mimon of Shach. Either way you look at things, Rabbi Yehuda the Omar Lo Yechalek Chenvoni Kloyos Vegoiz in Latinoikos. Rabbi Yehuda said that a store owner is not allowed, not entitled to distribute the what we call the different kinds of candies. Polig Ahach Brisa. He would argue with the source that says Ata Isa Besir Shecha Vani Isa Besir Sheli, and that brisa is not choishish for interference with livelihood. So the question then is, if you want to say that there's a machloikis tanoim, the Gemara could have cited the Mishnah, which is a stronger source than a Brisa, in which she saw Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, who was restrictive in the area of interference with someone else's livelihood. So to reiterate, if the Gemara wants to say that Rav Huna's din is a machlokes tanoim, wouldn't it have been more appropriate to cite Rabbi Yehuda with the restriction of distributing the kloyos and egoizim as a Tanaic authority in a Mishnah that would be at odds with the source that was just quoted as a kasha on Rav Huna, where it had said Ata Oisa B'Seich Shechov Ani Oisa B'Seich Shalis? You'd have a machlokes between this particular source where the interference of Parnos is not an issue versus Rabbi Yehuda, who says that it is an issue. So Tosfos explains why did the Gemara opt to point out the machlokes Tanaim by citing this brisa of Kofin B'nei Mevuos. Might have been more desirable on the part of the Gemara to cite a source in which the issue of parnosa competition is dealt with in explicit terms. That's pligi behedyo bochi, as opposed to Rabbi Yehuda didn't speak in terms he didn't speak in explicit terms about restrictions upon opening competition. He spoke, we'll call it, in a roundabout fashion in terms of the distribution of the bait to allure the children to to his particular store, and not speak in such explicit terms as you see featured in the source the Gemara cited with the Tanakama versus Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. We continue now with the next Tosfos, Dibur HaMaschil Kaifin. This refers to the Gemara 14 lines from the bottom. Kaifin b'nei movui zeh ezeh v'chulei v'lo malame tinoikis. Gemara cited a source in which the members of the Movui can impose restrictions upon one another, and we explained that v'lo malame tinoikis, that means members of this Movui with regard to the members of another Movui, Kaifin, which is mashma, that when it comes to members of that very same Movui, ain Kaifin, they cannot restrict one another. With that introduction in mind, Nire Lari. Now, we should point out that we have a volcano marking that highlights the Ri, and later we'll be highlighting Rav Shimshon ben Avram. So when we have a source that says that members of one Movui can restrict members of another Movui from coming in to set up a Malamed Tinoikis operation, but we infer from that members of the same Movui cannot restrict one another from opening up a second Malamed Tinoikis operation. Nira Lari de Bemalamed Tinoikis Nochrim Airi. The Ri is of the opinion that we're talking about some type of, we'll say, educational setup for children of idol worshippers. V'lo itochein igoras liel echod mibnei movui. This is a reference to the Gemara on Omid Aleph, 22 lines from the top, where the issue of noise objection was the topic. And we cannot say this pshat if you're going to have as a girsa in that Gemara Echo Mibnei Movui. The Hamukminon Leiliel Betinoikis Nochrim Umeakvin Olov Bnei Movui. There we explained the Gemara as talking about children from idol worshippers, and the B'nai Mavui, that means the members of that very same Mavui, are entitled to object. The Hachakomar, and here in our source, it says, D'lishcheno eino kofehu. That means members of the same Mavui are not able to restrict. V'afilu Reb Shimon Gamliel, and even Reb Shimon Gamliel here, who speaks in terms of restriction, lo polig elo mishum deposik lichiyuse. His only objection is because of parnosa interference. Avo mishum kol tinoikos lo chayish. But as far as noise is concerned, even Reb Shimon Gamliel would not have been objecting. So what comes out is that according to all the opinions over here, namely on Daf Chof Beis, Daf Chof Aleph from the Beis, when it comes to members of the same Mavui, you cannot object because of Kol, because of noise. And with that in mind, we see a contradiction to that which we saw on Omer Aleph, that when it comes to members of that very same Mavui, an objection concerning noise could be raised. Now, all of this contradiction arises if you would have as your girsa in the Gemara before on Omer Aleph the word Mavui. Because if you would have as your girsa before on Daf on Chof Aleph Omer Aleph the girsa of Chotzer, what would the result be? Then we would say only within the same courtyard could an objection be raised regarding noise. But from one Chotzer to another, members of Chotzer A cannot object to noise coming from Chotzer B. Between one Chotzer and another, within the same Mavui, there would be no ability. You would have no right to object. So with and with that in mind, then that would be in conformity with the Gemara over here on Omid Beis. So as a result, it's important as far as the Re is concerned that you should not have on Omid Aleph the Girsa of Echad Mibnei Mavui, but rather Echad Mibnei Chotzer. Uler of Shimshon ben Avram, let me go back a little bit. Umihu l'fima shepirashi leil de garsin echad mibnei chotzer osi shapir. And however, like we pointed out earlier, that if you have as the girsa echad mibnei chotzer, then things are smooth. And just to repeat, how did things work out? Very simply, that within the same chotzer, noise objection could be raised, but within the same mavui, if you're feeling from chotzer to chotzer, then you cannot object to the noise. L'Rav Shimshon ben Avram nira dehacha b'tinoikis Yisrael. He has the approach that in our Gemara, where it said kofin b'nei mavui zed zed, and you cannot set up a malamed tinoikis, is talking even about a Torah education operation. V'afilu achar takonas Reb Shimon Gamla, even at a time period where educational operations are set up all over the place after the institution of Shimon of Yeshua ben Gamla, where he said where Moshev Malamed Tinekis b'chol ir v'ir. So why then, according to the Reb Shimshon ben Avram, does our Gemara express the ability to object? V'shayni hocha. Here it's different. Here in our Gemara, where it said kofin b'nei mavua zeh zeh, the kvar yeshom malamed tinokas achar, there's already an elementary educational operation going on. Well, if there's already such an operation going on, so to open up a second one, which will that is what one could object to. Ubesomuch, namely four lines from the bottom over here, dekomar demoide Rav Huna b'makridardiki de lo motzi makev. Rav Huna himself, who was quite restrictive in the realm of competition, concedes that when it comes to a Torah educational setup, you can't object. V'yafagav de'ihu sabar shumim leo, even though Rav Huna himself, when it came to issues of being of posik chiyuse, he held like Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, who was restrictive. How then can Rava say that with regard to the mikri dardiki you can't object? Tzorich lomar, the Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, who was machmir even within the same mavui, lo polig amlamatinoikis el ashora. His difference with the Tanakama, where he appeared to be restrictive, was only with regard to the other occupations. But Rav Shimon ben Gamliel would not have argued with regard to melamed tinoikis, and hence all the Tanoim would agree with the heter of melamed tinoikis, where you could not object to a a second melamed tinoikis operation being set up. We continue now with Tosfos Dibur HaMaschil Pshita, a reference to the Gemara 9 lines from the bottom. We emphasized this when we were learning the Gemara. We're within the Shita Reb Shua Reb Huna Breid Reb Yeshua Pshita Li Dabar Masa Abar Masa Achriti Motzi Ma'akev. With regard to Psika Posik Chiyusei, interfering with someone's parnasa, members of town A can object to a member of town B coming into town A and opening up competition. Rav Huna braid Rav Yeshua kirabonon svirole. In principle, Rav Huna braid Yeshua holds like the rabonon that said the shcheinoi einoi kofehu, that with regard to one's we'll use the general term, one's neighbor, one cannot object. So what does that mean when we say that when it comes to one's neighbor, one cannot object? Umiboyalei, what Rav Huna Brev Yeshua is not clear about, is bar mavua abar mavua de almo imotzi ma'akev. A member of one mavui objecting to the member of another mavui in the same town, is the objection there legitimate? And what's the issue of doubt? Ihave bichlal shcheinoi ilav, is bar mavua a bar mavua of the same town considered Shechino? And if it's considered Shechino, then you cannot object. You can't object to the member of one Movui coming into another Movui and opening up competition. Ilav, or maybe not. Maybe that's not called Shechino. The only time that you cannot object is if it's the member of, it's a second individual, a member of the same Movui. Kidapirish Akuntris. This explanation of what Rabbi Yeshua, Rav Huna Rabbi Yeshua was in doubt of, is in line with Rashi's explanation. The Kavosei Kaimolon, and we will hold like him Lagabi Rav Huna in with regard to a machlokis, and we have a machlokis here between Rav Huna Rabbi Yeshua and Rav Huna. Rav Huna Rabbi Yeshua holds that when it comes to a fellow member of the same Mavui, party number one cannot object to party number two. There's no taina of psikas chiyusei. So Rav Huna Brev Yeshua was, we'll say, lenient in the realm of allowing for competition against Rav Huna himself, who said nothing doing, that even the member of the same Mavui has no right to open up competition. And why will we go like Rav Huna Rav Yeshua? The Basra, who is Rashi, as the Tosfos says at the end, he was a later authority. And when you have a machlokas between an earlier authority and a later authority, without getting into details right now, but the halacha, we have a principle, halacha ke basra. We continue with the next, and actually the last Tosfos, Dibur HaMaschil Ve'i. This is a reference to the Gemara, 8 lines from the bottom. Even though we said that a member of one town can object to the member of another town opening up competition over here, if, however, the member of the second town pays taxes to the first town, so he's called Shayach Bekarga. He has a connection with regard to or an association with the first town because he pays taxes there. Lo Motzi Makev, members of that town cannot object. Pirush Bnei Ho'ir. That means members of the city. If we're using our example, city number one and city number two, and a member from city number two pays his taxes to the municipality of city number one, so members of or citizens of city number one cannot object to a resident of city number two coming into city one where he pays his taxes and opens up competition. So that's who can. The reference to those who cannot object. Avol. So we have a member of city number two paying his taxes to city number one, and he wants to open up a store in a particular movui. In a case like that, the members of that movui can object. We don't want you opening up your competition in our movui. So the question remains, what needs clarification here is if any given movui can object, so where do we see this allowance for him to open up in city number one where he pays his taxes? So we can offer as an explanation that if it's a municipal market, a town shuk, it's not a place, it's not a specific movui, it's not a specific alleyway or cul-de-sac, it's not a semi-private location, but rather it's a totally public municipal location. In that case, so members of town number one cannot object to this individual from town number two opening up a stall in a public or municipal market area. And that is, once again, by virtue of the fact that Mr. Member of Town 2 is paying his taxes to Town Number 1. With that, we conclude our shiur for today. We must make a correction. We prematurely concluded the shiur. We continue with the Tosfos at the top of Daf Chof Beis Omen Aleph. Dibur Masl Kina Seifrim Tar B'Chochma. We learned this as part of our Shira in the Gemara. Tosfos points out what we also pointed out as far as the Girsa is concerned. V'lo Gar Sinan Kamo Shiesh B'Sforim, do not have as your Girsa at the Gemara at the bottom of Chof Aleph Omid Beis. In our printed Gemaras, the printer put parentheses around this anyway. So, do not have as part of the Girsa the Omar Ma'ezer Tikin Lem Yisrael Shimoshivin Sofer Betzad Sofer, that Ezra established established competition between teachers of children. That you shall have one sofer next to another sofer being a child educator. Why should that not be part of the girsa? In Maseches Bava Kama, in the seventh perek, there's a list of 10 enactments that Ezra established, and this is not one of them. So it would be inaccurate to say that Ezra established you Meshivin Sofer Betzad Sofer. And with that, we conclude our shiur for today.